Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 31 of the Pause.com Entertainment Podcast. I am your host, Lou, and as we discussed last week, Tony has been on vacation. So, sitting in for him today is my friend and all-around good guy and filmmaker and editor, Jerry Vassalatos. How you doing, Jerry?
Hey, I'm good, Lou. Thanks for inviting me today.
Hey, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. So we'll talk a little bit about, you know, some of the work that you've done and that sort of thing when we get to the movie section. In the meantime, you want to just give people a little intro on yourself and, you know, what your entertainment interests are and
sure.
where they lie?
I'm an independent filmmaker based in Chicago now. I worked in Los Angeles for 10 years doing some directing and mostly editing. And now I'm back here in Chicago working mostly again as a freelance editor, but also developing a couple of feature film projects that I'm going to be directing.
Cool.
One that I'm attached to with a group out of Kentucky called Bluegrass Run.
Okay.
And another called Butcher's Dozen, which I'm developing under my own production company banner, that is a crime thriller set in Chicago.
Oh, that's cool. What time period does it take place in?
Contemporary.
Okay, cool.
Contemporary. It's very much in the vein of Seven and Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, wow.
For people who like police procedural stories where
that
they're chasing
cool.
after a serial killer in a race against time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do you like serial killer stuff in general?
I do. I've always been very fascinated by crime stories and law enforcement stories. I just ended up picking up the two first and second seasons of Law and Order on DVD because I've been catching them on the USA Network, and I know it's a show that's been very long running.
Yeah.
But I never really watched it before,
right.
So I wanted to go back to the beginning and kind of get to know about Vincent D'Onofrio's character.
Yeah.
As the series. Originally was broadcast. And I also am big into crime thrillers like the aforementioned Seven and Silence of the Lambs. I really loved Zodiac with Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
That was an amazing police procedural, especially since it was based in fact with the Zodiac killings in San Francisco in the 70s.
Yeah, those are always a little bit more creepy.
They
you
are.
Know that it's, you know, something that really was going on. I mean, I remember when I saw that movie,
Zodiac?
Just like thinking, like, I can't imagine having lived through that kind of situation, because I thought the movie did a really good job of instilling that paranoia that everybody had while that was happening.
Yeah.
You know, it was like something that you like couldn't get away from if you lived in that area at that
time. And also, I think it was fascinating to see that era recreated. I mean,
yeah.
I was a kid. I was born in 1966, and if I'm recalling correctly, I think the murders began in the late 60s or early 70s. So seeing that era represented and remembering being a kid growing up during that time, you could kind of relate with your own memories of that
right.
era growing up. So all the more, and it's all the more creepier, as you say, because it actually really did happen.
Right. And you know, it took place in New York, right?
No, San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco.
Yeah.
Wait, what am I thinking of?
You might be thinking of Summer of Sam.
Yeah, maybe
about
that's what I'm thinking
of. The Son of Sam murders.
Yeah.
I didn't see that film, but I know that I think it was Spike Lee who did that film.
I don't remember, but one of the things that's really funny about anything in that time period is everything was much grittier and I don't know. It was after the whole Age of Innocence thing.
Yeah.
But yet still, everything was much more simple. You know, the pace of everything was much slower, obviously, than it is now. I mean, I think that always increases as time goes on and as our integration of our personal lives and technology increases.
Technology,
especially,
I think, is what's really changed things and made things much, much faster and sped up.
But it was really cool. I think in both of those movies, it was really cool how I think they did a good job, too, of capturing just that whole feeling of that sort of grittiness and that little difference, you know, some of those subtle differences in the way life was then and the way it is now.
The eye for detail with films like that really does help pull you into it. You know, another film, not of the serial killer genre, but of that era, is Born on the 4th of July, which Oliver Stone did, which was the Ron Kovic story, which was set in the 1960s and early 70s, again, an era that we grew up through when we were very, very young and
right.
I have vague memories of, but it's like, it's coming back to me now.
Yeah.
Seeing the detail that they paint in these films of those particular eras that they end up, that the stories are set in.
Yeah, and I've talked about this a little bit before too, and so I won't go too much into it, but one of the things that kind of always bothers me about contemporary films is ever since, I would say right around 82 or so, film stock completely changed.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like if you go back and watch, you know, like Raiders of the Lost Ark or Empire Strikes Back, those were like the last movies that were made with that old film stock.
You're right.
That had that, like, just something about it. There was so much more texture to it. And ever depth since and then, everything's been like a little bit slicker, a little, you know, more perfect. And I think that really takes something away from the film experience
miss. Yeah, well, you know, touching on that, I recently saw Public Enemies, which I thought was a great film. But I was really shocked that representing a historical era like that, I believe Michael Mann shot digitally.
Yeah.
And you could see the artifacting. Now, I don't know. I'm pretty certain it was video, because I don't think that the theater I was in was video projection.
Okay.
And you could see the lighting in the background. You could almost see a very, very slight halo around things that you would normally see when you were watching a digitally shot film. So, you know, a little disappointing, a gangster movie.
Yeah.
You would want them to use a film stock that really had that depth and that and that that look that you're talking about with film stocks of the 1980s. The older film stocks with other films.
Right, yeah. Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk more about movies in a little bit. First, I want to talk a little bit about video games. I don't really have much to talk about here. As I mentioned on last week's show, I finally started playing World of Warcraft, which I had never gotten into before, and I actually really enjoyed it. I definitely understand why it's the biggest MMO that's out there, because it's really easy to get into, and there's a lot to do, so it's a lot of fun right away. Whereas another thing that I've been talking about a lot recently is the closed beta of Ion, which the last one, number 6, starts today. And then I think they're doing an open beta starting in a couple of weeks or something before it launches in September. But, you know, even as pretty as that game is, it's much harder to get into. There seems like there's much less in the way of options that you can do with your character and where you can go with it and the way that you can build up your character and everything. So, so I, like I said, I really am kind of into World of Warcraft right now, and probably will be playing it for a while. I was playing Warhammer Online before this and canceled that account so I could play this instead. But
so, World of Warcraft is an online game?
Yeah, it's the biggest MMO in terms of, you know, the user base that's subscription based. There are ones like Guild Wars that are free that, you know, are a lot bigger still, but World of Warcraft is the biggest paid one. I mean, there's just millions of people that use it. And, you know, it's been running for a few years now, I think 4 or 5 years, and it's still going pretty strong. They keep adding new content to it all the time, so there's always new stuff to do. But, I mean, there's just a lot to do in it. There's a pretty good crafting system where, you know, you can make stuff that you can either sell to other players or use for yourself or, you know, auction off or just sell to vendors in the game and that sort of thing. And you know, again, it's challenging without being too complicated, and I think they've really found a good balance there, so it's pretty cool.
I think the last online multiplayer game that I took part in was, and I'm embarrassed now because I'm forgetting which game it was, but it was one of the Star Wars titles.
Was it Star Wars Galaxies?
I think that's what it was. Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was pretty cool though to be operating in Lucas's universe and choosing your character and interacting with other people. But after a while, I mean, I just, it's been a while since I've played. So.
I
don't have a PC anymore either. I don't know if it was Mac. It was a Mac game when I was playing. I was playing it on a PC originally, and then I got a Mac. So
yeah,
been a long time since I've been doing online gaming.
But. Yeah. There's a new, we've mentioned it a couple times on the show before, but there's a new Star Wars MMO coming out probably next year called The Old Republic.
Oh, I think I've read about that.
And it looks like it's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Some other miscellaneous video game news. Like I said, closed beta 6 for Ion starts today at noon Pacific time, which is just now, as a matter of fact. And there should be a big patch there. They're upping the level cap to 30, so if you figure out a way to actually get to level 30 in the next 3 days, good for you, and go into the Abyss or whatever it's called and see what that's all about, because I think that's the only place that you can really fly a lot. So
what's the setting of that game for a neophyte who knows about it?
It's a world that is sort of shaped like an apple core, and the sort of the middle part that connects the top and the bottom shattered, and both the top half of the world and the bottom half of the world thought the other half was destroyed, so they don't know they exist.
That's cool.
So what happens is they finally come together initially, I think, to battle each other, but then realize there's this whole other world going on in the middle in their version of hell, for lack of a better word.
Okay.
And so you end up having to go in there and fight all those people together, I think.
Very clever.
And one of the aspects of the game that they keep pumping is the fact that you can fly. But so far I've been kind of disappointed with that, because one of my characters is like almost level 20, I think, and there's only one place in the entire game so far that I've been able to fly, which is a total drag.
So you have to build up your experience or your points to get to the flying mode?
Yeah, you get it at level 10, you can first start to fly, and then once you get to level 25, you can go into to that sort of middle area of the world where the epic battles take place, supposedly, and you can fly around in there a lot from what they've said, but I don't know anybody who's actually gotten to that level yet, so we'll see what happens. ArenaNet co-founder Jeff Strain has left NCSoft, which has left a lot of people wondering what's going to happen with Guild Wars 2, but co-founder Mike O'Brien has assured people that Guild Wars 2 will not be affected by this and that the public will get to see very soon what they've been working on. So possibly that means that at Penny Arcade Expo in the beginning of September in Seattle, they might finally show something about Guild Wars 2. Now, like I mentioned, since you asked, Guild Wars is probably my favorite online game that I've played so far. It was a game that you had to pay to buy, but then it was free to play. There was no monthly subscription. Mm-hmm. And the character art and the like creature art and the environments were just absolutely gorgeous. And it was a lot of fun because you could play it pretty well by yourself, but if you had other friends in the game, you know, you could group together and do a lot of cool stuff that way. But just a really, really beautiful game, really fun game mechanics and everything. And they've been working on the sequel to that for like 2 years now, and nobody's seen anything yet. They haven't released a single bit of artwork or screenshots or anything. So might be coming at the beginning of September, which would be pretty cool. And then something that you might be interested in, there's a game called Champions Online that's coming out pretty soon. That's an online game that's all based around superheroes. But the cool thing about it is you get to completely invent your superhero.
Oh, cool.
So when you go through your character creation, you come up with all the stuff that your guy can do. And like even with things like, let's say you have some kind of, you know, death ray that shoots out your eyes, you can change that to come out your ears if you wanted and make it yellow or green or blue or whatever.
And really, who of us have not conceived of our own superhero characters that we'd
exactly.
like to be?
Exactly.
Right down to our costumes, right?
Yeah.
And sourcing where we'd actually get this stuff if we wanted to go out and be real life vigilantes.
Yeah. Well, you might have to talk about that a little bit later because I think you may have done more of that than some of the rest of us. But no, I mean, it sounds really cool and it's done in that kind of like motion comic style. So it looks like, you know, like a high-end color comic book with animation. Mm. You know, they're not doing like a typical 3D graphics. They're doing it more of an animated style. So it should be pretty cool. And so here's the schedule for the open beta and early start. On Monday, the open beta starts. And every night they're going to turn off the servers from 1 to 3 in the morning Pacific time. And then on the 24th, they're going to shut them down and wipe them. And then on the 28th, early start begins. So anyone who pre-ordered the game from GameStop or Best Buy can start playing on the 28th. And then everyone else, I think, can start playing on September 1st.
Now, if you're playing a superhero in this game that you're creating,
yeah.
Are you fighting other superheroes or are you fighting other members who are creating villains for themselves?
Well, I think it's probably going to be both. Most of these games have both player versus environment where you play against the stuff that the developers have created in the environment.
Okay.
But they usually all have player versus player aspects, whether it's in some kind of arena or certain servers that are dedicated to that. So wherever you are, if you run into somebody of the opposing, you know, group or whatever, you can just start attacking them.
Like the Justice League versus the Avengers.
Yeah, exactly. Like that kind of thing. And so, but another thing that I understand about this game is that not only can you create your own superhero, but you can also create your own supervillain who you will battle from time to time.
Cool.
And I guess your supervillain that you come up with will like show up in different places in the game for you to fight against.
That's cool.
So
that's
it looks like it's going to be really neat. People who pre-ordered it also will get access to the closed beta of Star Trek Online, which is supposed to happen sometime later this year. So that should be pretty cool to see, too. A company called CTA Digital has announced their iPod steering wheel for probably about $20. It's basically a plastic steering wheel that you stick your iPod in the middle of so that it takes advantage of the accelerometer controls.
What will they think of next?
I don't know, but I think they did the same thing for the Wii, but I hate playing games on the iPhone. I don't know why anyone does that.
It's, you know, if you're in a pinch or you're stuck on an airplane or something, I understand it. But as a regular platform, that's what TV is for.
Well, not only that, but the controls are the accelerometer controls are just terrible. You know, Tony and I have talked about this a lot. It depends on the kind of game. Certain kinds of games where it's not very twitchy. And it's not real time sensitive, you know, it's okay. Like you said, especially if you just need a little time waster now.
Sure,
and then.
Sure, which but is any, what but I like use my iPhone as.
A driving game, I mean, come on. I don't know, I guess if you stuck it in the steering wheel, it might work okay, but I don't know. The new version of Wolfenstein comes out on Tuesday, so that should be fun, especially if you like paranormal games about killing Nazis.
Now, they're doing some kind of cross-promotion, I think, with Inglourious Basterds.
Are they really?
I think so, because I saw some photos from the red carpet of the premiere, and Wolfenstein was all over, you know, the red carpet
background.
Oh, that's
pretty funny. Maybe they sponsored it or
they
something.
They may have, but it makes sense.
Yeah, you know? That's cool. And then MMO site massively.com is looking for new bloggers. So if you're totally into MMOs and you would like to blog about it, I have no idea if they're paying for this or if they just, you know, if it's a free thing. But go to massively.com and check that out. And then finally, Fallen Earth's open beta starts on Monday, too. And that's an MMO set in a sort of post-apocalyptic world. So if you really enjoyed the Fallout games and Mad Max movies, you might like that, too. I kind of get sick of those kind of things after a while because they're so bleak.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I much prefer to have a huge variety in terms of my locations and what things look like. So, I don't know, personally, I get a little bored with post-apocalyptic stuff. After a pretty short while, but and I still haven't gotten to play the last Fallout 3 add-on Mothership Zeta because it kept crashing on me, so I'm going to try that this weekend too. But we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back. Oops, excuse me. We'll be back to talk about TV. Okay, we're back and it's time to talk about TV. What have you been watching lately?
You know, I have to tell you, I don't watch a lot of TV unless I'm tuning into news, but right. I do collect a lot of DVDs
okay.
and end up watching stuff that's off the air, but
right.
you know, the DVD sets have got so much extra content. I've been catching up, although I did watch it in its original broadcast, on season 4 of Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
Because the DVD set has got extended episodes.
Oh, okay.
So although, you know, the episodes are pretty satisfying watching them on Sci-Fi Channel, or what are they calling it now, Skiffy?
No, I think they went from Skiffy to
Skiffy,
Sci-Fi.
Well, what, yeah, yeah.
But, they got rid of their extra consonants.
Yeah, they've got some really, they've got some extended episodes. They've got the original episodes on the DVD set,
okay.
but then they've got the longer episodes with all the unaired stuff that they couldn't squeeze into their,
that's
their
so
time
cool.
format. So,
now, did you get it on DVD or Blu-ray, or is it only on
DVD.
One
I haven't gotten the Blu-ray set yet.
Okay.
But, no, it's on, I think it's available on both now.
Okay.
But, of course, it's also got all the extra content, all the behind-the-scenes documentaries and interviews with the cast and producers. So
yeah.
It was just such a wonderfully written show. And
it was.
I was really on the fence when it first came out because I'm very good friends with Richard Hatch,
yeah.
who was on the original show. And I remember at the time that they announced the new show, the reimagining, you know, there was a lot of outcry against it. And I myself watched the first season and I was like, you know, if they're going to reimagine something, why don't they just give it a new name?
Right, right.
But by the second season, they won me over. And yeah. they had also, you know, Richard was also very gracious. I think a lot of Richard's efforts trying to continuation of Battlestar Galactica
yeah.
opened up the eyes of Universal and realized that they were sitting on this property that was ripe for doing something with.
Sure.
And they had talked to Tom DeSanto about doing a continuation of the original show, but 9/11 happened, production shut down,
right.
and then they went a different direction when they talked to Ron Moore and just completely wiped the slate clean and used the concept of the original series as a springboard for the new series that they did.
Right.
But the fourth season really paid off. All of the twists and turns and little questions that you had for three seasons, where is this going to go? They covered all of it. And
yeah.
it was one of those situations where I was reminded of how everybody thinks that George Lucas had some manuscript sitting in a vault somewhere about how he knew Star Wars was going to go from start to finish, which you know is a lot of BS because
right.
he's making it up as he went along.
Right.
But although I think that there was a lot of on Battlestar Galactica, the new series, I think that there was a lot of development as they went along. They knew where they were taking it. They
right.
knew where it was going to go. So all the little seeds that they planted along the way ended up paying off in the final episode.
With a couple of exceptions.
Well, which?
Daniel, the whole thing about Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel was
kind
of a rabbit hole.
Thing.
That was a rabbit hole.
A lot of
I was reading a lot of the message forums, the viewer forums, and people thought that Daniel was going to, because they thought that Kara's father was going to be Daniel.
That's exactly
somehow
what
he was
going
to be a Cylon
yeah.
or. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have to read. That's true. That was a minor point that I didn't really pursue that much, wondering how they were. But I think even Ron Moore said in one of his online message board postings, or he was talking about the show, that that was something we threw out that really wasn't meant to go anywhere, but a lot of people grabbed onto it and thought it was supposed to go somewhere.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing with Galactica too, because there was so much math involved in that show, you know, that it's like you add one thing in there that it's like you can't get away from it then, you know,
everything
builds
up on each
other. Corner. Yeah, so that was kind of funny. And in fact, we talked about this a little bit a few months back, but they spoofed that. I forget what channel it was on. Maybe it was like G4 or Attack of the Show or something like that. But they had Grace Park on there, and she was making fun of some guy who wrote in asking about the whole
I think I saw that. It was really funny. I did remember
seeing that. Math guy, we explained this, all right? Space math, duh. You know, it was like it was kind of a funny thing. But yeah, it was such a great show. I mean, there were very few episodes of that show that you would watch and then be like, eh, that was just kind of okay.
There was one in season four. Season four, I think two or three episodes before the ending, there was this one episode after Ellen had been brought back. And it was just everybody talking to each other, basically catching everybody up.
Oh, the exposition from Hell
exposition
episode.
That's the one.
That was terrible. Yeah,
it was. Yeah, I was just like, oh my God, please. Yeah. I hope that it doesn't end up being this way. But they redeemed themselves by the next episode.
Yeah.
I think it's really worth picking up on DVD or Blu-ray. Because if you're a hardcore Battlestar Galactica fan, it's worth it at the very least for seeing the extended episodes, even more so to hear the cast and crew talk and the extra segments that I don't know that they were all put on the website.
Right.
If you want to get a little bit more behind the scenes fix on a great show that unfortunately, although we've got the
Caprica is coming.
We've got Caprica, and we've also got The Plan, which is the one-shot TV movie that's going to basically tell the story from the Cylons' point of view, Final Five.
Now, is that this fall, November or something like that?
I believe The Plan is going to be broadcast in November.
Okay.
Yeah, I think. It might be earlier.
Yeah.
But I think Caprica comes next year, although they've released the pilot on DVD. It was an interesting
concept.
I liked it.
It was kind of especially the Adama part of the story.
Yes.
It was kind of interesting that they came from this sort of gangster background.
Yeah,
You know, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, it's always funny when TV shows or even movies cast people who, you know, you've seen in things, especially when you were younger, like in Caprica, Eric Stoltz.
Yeah.
You know, who I really haven't seen in a while.
Right.
You know, he's one of those people that was kind of around when we were growing up and watching movies, Mask and Some Kind of Wonderful. One of my favorite movies from the 80s.
Yep.
And then, you know, hasn't done a ton of high profile stuff since then.
I think he did Pulp Fiction.
Was he in that?
I think he was Rosanna Arquette's dealer boyfriend.
Oh, I
don't remember
right.
specifically, but he was like a junkie or dealer or something. But that's the last thing I really remember him prominently in.
And then this, and you know, and he was great in it. I really liked him in it.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's like Richard Hatch. You know, again, you know, now I don't know him. You know, I don't know everything that he's been up to, but I don't think I had seen him since Battlestar Galactica.
He's done a few things. He's done a lot of independent, low budget stuff. But this was a really great opportunity for him to be reintroduced to audiences and play something so wonderfully different. And I've spoken to him a couple times, and he's very, very close to the Tom Zara character.
Yeah.
To the degree where he was afraid people were misunderstanding this character. He was never a villain.
Yeah.
And I could see that. I mean, you have the like white hat, black hat. Was he a good guy? He's a bad guy. And Zarek was a very nicely painted character. He was many, many shades. And even if he was the nemesis for Adama, you understood why he was doing what he was doing. He was a terrorist, yes, but he wasn't a terrorist because he was
evil
or he was twisting his mustache.
Right.
You know, he was representing.
He just had a different agenda.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even up to the end, it's like you kind of understood why he and Gaeta did what they did. But unfortunately, and, you know, interesting too that his character and Gaeta did not have the other or were not privy to the information that Adama or Roslyn had, which is why they were directing things. Now, if you were in the fleet and you had Adama and Roslyn just pushing their agenda without really explaining it, although we as the viewers understood why they were doing things, you can understand why Zarek and Gaeta would have pulled what they did with their mutiny.
Absolutely. And what I was going to say, too, is that, you know, I thought Richard Hatch was fantastic on Galactica. And, you know, again, not having seen him since the first show, which in general was pretty cheesy. I mean, even though I loved it back then, it was a cheesy show.
Well, it was a Star Wars offshoot. Although, you know, they were doing the best that they could and as kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched the old episodes too, and it was 70s. It was 70s, 80s television.
Yeah,
there were things that Glenn Larson wanted to do in a second season. He wasn't allowed to because they pulled the plug.
Right.
But then they realized, oh, wait a minute. We were doing really well with viewership on Sundays. We want you to do another Galactica, but we don't want you to spend $1 million an episode. We want you to do Galactica 1980.
Yeah.
And I interviewed Glenn Larson for an anniversary retrospective that I did for Galacticon 2003 in Los Angeles. And I don't want to say that Glenn was outright apologizing for Galactica 1980, but it wasn't what he wanted to do.
Right.
It was ordered up. He was a producer. He was asked to come on and help them fill time and produce the show. And the guy was working. I mean, what was he going to do, tell them
exactly.
No? So,
exactly.
You know, a lot of people dismissed Galactica 1980, except for the Return of Starbuck episode, which was great because we finally got a chance to see what happened to Dirk Benedict.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the original show was
well,
fun.
Well, and what happened was he was with the A-Team for a while, right? And so he couldn't fly spaceships anymore.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that I can't speak for Dirk, and I don't want to speak for Richard either, but in my conversations with Richard, I think the reason he did not want to come back to do Galactica 1980 was because, you know, it wasn't Galactica.
Right. Yeah, it was something different.
And when they did that fill-in episode with Return of Starbuck, it was an opportunity, I think, when the Galactica 1980 team knew that, okay, production's shutting down, but we have an opportunity to, for one episode, they brought back Boomer, they brought back Starbuck, they at least tried to fill in something of what happened after the original series ended, which was kind of fun.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about Galactica in a little bit.
Okay.
The only thing that I really want to talk about is we watched Chopped again this week. And if you haven't heard of this, it's a show on Food Network where these chefs come in and they're given a basket of ingredients that, like, generally you would never put together.
Mm-hmm.
And over three courses, they have to make stuff out of these ingredients. So they get a basket for the appetizer course, and then whoever's dish sucks the most gets chopped. And then in the next round, they have a new basket with different stuff, and they do the same thing for the entree, and then finally they do the same thing for the dessert. And the dessert this time had some of the strangest ingredients in it. It was just so weird, like guacamole, and it's like, how do you make a dessert with guacamole? But, you know, so, like, you know, these people do go through these different rounds of this show. And
now, how does the audience know? I mean, are there judges on the show that you're
sampling
things to kind of relay to the audience?
There's no audience participation. You're just watching it. So the chefs cook, and then the three judges, you know, determine who gets kicked off after every round. And it's just, you know, it's just a one-shot thing. You know, the episode airs and then those chefs are gone and four new ones come the next week. But it's a lot of fun, and you know, it's always so interesting to see, because I don't cook that much and I don't consider myself a good cook, so it's always interesting to me to watch people come out and take stuff that they did not expect to be there. And, you know, they've only got 20 minutes in the first round.
Right.
20 minutes to come up with and prepare and plate four dishes of this food, of whatever they just made up with these crazy ingredients that don't even go together. I'm just completely floored by that.
Can I share a very quick recipe
here since we're
on this?
Sure.
This is, if ever a deli sandwich is ever named after me, and I don't know that it ever will be because I don't think anyone's ever going to care, but this is a holdover from when I was a kid, and you will be shocked. It's really good. Bologna, cream cheese, rye bread.
Okay.
It's good.
That sounds like it would be pretty good.
It really is. And I've ordered it in delis, and people are looking at me like, where'd you get that idea? I don't know how I came up with it when I was a kid, but I was, you know.
Was it something that you had at home or something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I ate it all the time. You know, I was always eating peanut butter and jelly, and I loved bologna, but they'd always put mustard or mayonnaise. And I don't know where I decided to ask my mom to put cream cheese on it, but it's been my holdover
sandwich.
That's
your thing.
So that's my thing. Yeah. Try it.
I have a breakfast sandwich that I have. Well, I used to have it on the weekends a lot, but I've tried to stop eating it because it's so bad for you. I go to Panera and I get an everything bagel, and I toast it. I put a little bit of butter on it, a little bit of Parmesan cheese, egg whites with pepper in them, some pepper bacon, and a slice of Munster cheese on top of that.
That sounds good.
And make a sandwich out of that. Oh, my gosh, it's fabulous.
It sounds like it.
Fabulous.
A little bit
but
of spice.
So bad. Yeah, there's a little bit of
the cheese
pepper
and
in it.
Egg
and you know, and even bagels are terrible for you.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
They're just
it's
bad
carb.
For you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not good ones
you
either.
You want to perform carbicide, just eat lots of bagels.
Exactly. And then you crash like an hour and a half later.
Exactly.
You start to get all jittery, like, I need a cheeseburger. Stargate Universe has a new featurette introducing some of the main characters with footage from the series' first episode called Air. We posted it on pause.com, and so you can watch it there. ABC's V will premiere on Tuesday, November 3rd at 8 p.m. It was originally supposed to air next year, but they moved it way up.
I saw the trailer for that. I'm intrigued, having seen the original V series when I was younger.
Now, did you watch Firefly?
I loved, not when it was originally broadcast,
but later.
It was one of those I picked up on DVD and watched it in the proper order.
Yeah.
Loved Firefly.
Great show. And,
loved it.
You know, Morena Baccarin is the head alien in V, so I'm very much looking forward
she's
to that.
She's great. She's great.
Yeah, she's pretty fantastic. And then Simon Cowell will be a judge on American Idol for at least three more seasons, finalizing his deal with Fox right now, probably for $45 million a year.
Excuse me.
A year.
Obscene.
It is. It's completely obscene. And, you know, it really puts things into perspective, too, because I don't know if you care about American Idol, but we talk about it on the show. And Paula Abdul is not going to be back because
she
wanted at least $10 million a year, and they were only willing to to offer her five.
Well, with Simon making 45, I mean, they had to make sure that they had enough to pay Simon, right?
Well, Seacrest is making $15 million a year now.
God. So, and she wanted how much?
I think she wanted at least as much as him, or maybe at least 10 or something.
Well, she deserved
like
it, given the fact that people are tuning in to watch her train wreck every week.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I'm really bummed that she's not going to be on the show anymore.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it is. All right, well, we will be back in a minute then to talk about movies. All right, we're back, and it's time to talk about movies. Now, you said you had seen... What were you just talking about a minute ago?
I was watching the director's cut of Watchmen.
No, before that, what did you say? What was the movie that you mentioned
before? Public Enemies.
Oh, Public Enemies.
Michael Mann's Public Enemies.
Now, you really liked it. Tony saw it, and he... I haven't seen it, but he said that he thought that it was kind of slow until the last half hour, or was the first half hour good, and then the rest of it was kind of slow?
It depends on whether or not you can sit through slow movies.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who actually doesn't mind a little bit of a slower pace. I love action.
Yeah.
I grew up on it. You and I have talked about some of our favorite action movies in the past.
Yeah.
But I thought it was kind of cool to see a gangster movie that wasn't so focused on needing to get to the gunfights or the heavy action scenes and really spending time with these characters so that you could either relate to them or have some empathy for them. I mean, you know, there's no way you can condone bank robbers or you know, people shooting other people, but you know, I believe Michael Mann was trying to be as factually accurate as he could, and Dillinger wasn't doing this to like hurt people. He was doing it because he got a thrill out of it, and where he could, you know, the only time I think he ever fired on people was if he was, you know, running, he himself was in danger,
right?
But he was mixed up with some other bank robbers and gangsters in this movie who were, you know, were sociopaths and getting off on shooting other people and hurting other people.
Yeah.
So I think from that perspective it was kind of cool that they were spending some time to at least peeled back some layers of the onion to understand these characters in human terms as opposed to just the blank, you know, cliched canvases of the bad guy gangster.
Yeah. Now, did you, because one of the criticisms that I heard from a number of people was that they felt like there wasn't enough backstory on how Dillinger got to that point in the first place.
That's true.
Did you feel the same way?
You know, when I watched the film, I didn't feel it took away from it, but I can understand why people may have wanted to know a little bit more about his earlier life.
Yeah.
I don't know that there was really anything there that Mann or the writers could tap into maybe to help explain that.
Maybe we just don't know anyway.
That's what I mean. You know? Yeah, historically there might not have been a lot of information there too.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he did say in the film, he mentioned something about, I think it was to his girlfriend, I believe it was to his girlfriend, I don't think it was to Purvis, about how his father beat him. You know, he grew up in Indiana.
Okay.
And he kind of gave a little bit of exposition.
You grew up in Indiana and your father beats you, and then bad stuff happens after that.
Yeah, well, then you're going into Michael Jackson here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not a lot of good parenting
in Indiana.
I know some people from Indiana who are
yeah, themselves.
It's just
good
the ones
parents,
who become celebrities and notorious.
I guess so. Yeah, you know, it's funny too when people talk about, well, you know, I wish they would have told more about, you know, whoever it is, if it's a fact-based movie, because then I always think of that movie Perfect Storm, which I hated.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, everyone's like, oh, my God, I can't believe that's a true story. It's so tragic. It's like, well, it's not really a true story. It's true that they went out and never came back.
Right.
But
we don't know what happened.
They left 15 minutes into the movie. Everything after that was made up because they don't know what happened.
Exactly.
You know? They could be in Tahiti right now on the beach with a bunch of hotties. You don't know that. I mean, maybe they stole something, and I don't know.
Well, you know, maybe they could, you know, with Dillinger and Public Enemies, if they really wanted to explore his early life, they could go the route of the new Star Trek movie and, you know, to Dillinger 90210.
Exactly.
Where we go back like they did with the Star Trek characters and had to go back to the beginning and explain more about them.
Did you see the new Star Trek?
I did, and I liked it.
Yeah.
I'm being funny about it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine.
Oh dear,
someone's calling.
Someone's calling. My Dark Knight ringtone I've got to turn off.
Yeah, now, since you mentioned the Dark Knight, people should know that you are probably one of the world's biggest Batman fans.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like to pride myself as that.
And we'll...
to the point of it being, you know, really, okay, yeah, I'm a closet comic book Batman geek.
Yeah. And, I mean, you have a costume, right?
I've got a couple costumes.
Okay.
I've got replicas of Michael Keaton's 1989 suit from the original Batman film, and I've got a replica of Christian Bale's Batman Begins suit.
Okay.
Which, we're not talking off-the-rack stuff. We're talking about hardcore, you know, studio quality stuff that people look at this and they wonder, did you rob Warner Brothers right, or something. Right, yeah. Because right. when I collect a lot of high-end movie prop collectibles and costumes and stuff, and I like getting stuff that looks right,
right.
For display. And no, I don't wear it all the time, although Halloween is a good excuse, and the only excuse I have...
You notice people, he said all the time, which means that he does wear it from time to time.
No, only at Halloween. Okay. Halloween is the only excuse I have to be able to put one of these things on and go out and act stupid.
So you're not working on trying to replace Santa Claus with Batman at Christmas time or anything
no,
like that?
No.
All right, I'm just checking.
That's not a bad idea, though.
But now, where did you get these?
Well, I participate in a lot of online prop collecting forums.
Okay.
And DC Warner Brothers does not necessarily license stuff that is studio quality. So you have a lot of guys all across the nation, even in other countries, with their own garage workshops. Some guys will sculpt the full body armor and then, you know, do a mold and cast it in urethane or foam latex.
Right.
And it's an underground market. Yeah. I'm not going to point people in the direction. If you've got Google and you want to look, you can find
it. Yeah, you can find it.
But
right.
there are a lot of guys who create some really nice, you know, who are craftsmen.
Yeah.
You know, that ought to be working in Hollywood, and because there is not a supply line for people that want to collect really high-end prop or costume replicas, they kind of fill this niche. It's like collecting movie art.
That's pretty cool.
So, you know, people will spend a lot of money on sports memorabilia or fine art. I collect a lot of this stuff, and to me it's movie art, because it's like owning a part of your favorite movie and actually being able to display it and look at
sure.
it and say that this represents, you know, one of my favorite films and something that influenced me or that I, you know, I'm really into.
Yeah. If I was 2 inches taller, I'd probably want to get a Darth Vader costume.
I've got one of those.
But the problem is...
I've got lifts, Lou. You just get the boots with the lifts.
I like food a little too much, I think, to fit into a Darth Vader costume well, and that would look a little bit goofy. Like Darth Vader, you know, a few years later kind of thing.
You might be able to get away with it, though, because he's got a big barrel-chested figure, and you get the lifts, and then everything's proportionate.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe I'll look into that.
To loan you my costume some Halloween. Only in Halloween, though.
Yeah. Now, does it have a... do you have a like a really high-end mask that goes with it?
I've got two Darth Vader costumes. I've got the New Hope version,
okay,
and the Empire Strikes Back version, because there were subtle variations in the masks and the armor.
Yeah.
I've also got a Stormtrooper costume that is ABS plastic that was apparently cast from molds of the original A New Hope hero suits. So
is it really heavy?
It's not that. No. The Stormtrooper costume is not heavy at all to wear.
Okay.
It's just kind of tricky to get on because it's held on with a lot of Velcro to the body stocking or the bodysuit, the cotton unitard that you wear underneath. The Vader suit, oh yeah,
heavy,
Well, it's the bodysuit is leather.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So when you've got that leather suit on and the wool cape and the fiberglass helmet and the fiberglass armor. Yeah, it's a monster to wear. I mean, you will come out of it losing a few pounds.
Awesome. See, I need one.
So there is actually a benefit to it.
Now, does it have a voice thing in it, too?
Yeah, you can get one of those.
It modulates
those.
A little
bit. Yeah. I will have to confess, I did do a kid's birthday party last year.
Uh-huh.
One of my brother's nephews on his wife's side of the family, really sweet kid, big into Star Wars.
Yeah.
And his mom and dad knew I had the Vader costume. I said, yeah, I'll show up for his party. He completely believed it.
That's awesome.
It was the whole Santa Claus thing. You
now,
know?
If only Master Replicas could figure out how to make a lightsaber that actually...
Wouldn't that be nice?
You know, has some kind
actually
of contained little
properly.
Beam or something.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. But, you know, I think they're out of business. I think
they are.
Yeah.
Well, they lost the license.
They merged into something else, I think. Because I used to work in the toy business, and
Corgi
I knew those
guys.
Yeah, right.
Corgi
right.
picked... But I think that before Corgi acquired the Master Replicas line, Master Replicas, their Star Wars license had lapsed. They didn't renew it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And it's really a shame, too, because there were some really cool stuff that they were working on that never got released.
There's another company that's picked up the license, and I believe they're called EFX.
Okay.
I'll have to check and confirm that. But they basically picked up on all the stuff that Master Replicas did not move forward with. They
right.
just released the studio scale X-Wing.
Okay.
They showed off at San Diego Comic-Con. They're doing the studio scale TIE Fighter, TIE Interceptor.
Yeah. Did you go to Comic-Con this year?
I didn't.
Yeah.
I was actually shooting a short film that weekend, which
okay.
was just as cool.
Yeah.
But
or cooler, depending on your point of view.
I would have liked to have gone out to San Diego, but
Have you ever been?
I've gone twice.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I've gone twice when I lived in Los Angeles back in 1990. No. That was in, last time I was at Comic-Con, I think it was 2004.
Oh,
was
okay.
the last time I went to one, yeah.
Well, I was probably there, too. That's weird.
If I had only known.
I know.
We hooked up for lunch.
I know. There's a lot of fun stuff to do there.
I
can't wait to go back. You know, it's been probably 3 years, I think, since the last time I went.
Yeah.
And
well,
I really...
You know, We've kind of got a little bit of a taste of that with the Wizard Comic Con coming to Chicago.
Yeah, it just wrapped, I think.
Oh, was it this?
I thought it was last weekend.
Which other? Oh,
or
my
like
God,
a week
I missed
ago,
it.
Maybe.
Darn, I missed that. I didn't realize that. I thought it was coming up.
No, I think it just
wasn't
happened.
Paying attention.
There's I might be wrong, but I think it just happened.
Well, there's also Windy City Comic Con, but I don't think that it's the same scale as the
right.
The Wizard Comic Con.
Yeah.
Okay, EFX Collectibles. They're the ones who picked up Master Replica Star Wars license. So if you want to see some, get some. Slightly expensive, but nonetheless really
super
cool. High-end prop replicas. You could check out EFXCollectibles.com.
Cool.
They unveiled a lot of the new stuff at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Now, I saw G.I. Joe, but I don't want to talk about it because I know Tony saw it, so I think we're going to talk about it next week.
I didn't see it, so it's
but,
all yours.
You know, Amy and I watched Knowing on DVD.
Oh, I saw that in the theater.
On Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Last weekend, I guess, or a few nights ago or something. And, you know, we had heard a lot of bad stuff about it. And, you know, Nicolas Cage can sometimes be the kiss of death for a movie, according to a lot of people. But I actually kind of liked it. I mean, you know, it
was
had
interesting.
Some stupid stuff. But I have to say, the story was kind of compelling. And I applaud the filmmakers for not going the typical Hollywood story route at the end of the film.
With a happy ending.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually... Some of the effects in that movie, if you like disaster films, I think they mismarketed that film. Because if you like disaster films, there were some top-shelf stuff going on in this film.
Yeah, the airplane... Yeah, well, we don't want to spoil it.
Oh, my God.
When I saw it in the theater, I did not know what to expect. I mean, it started one way, and by the time it took the turn that it did towards the ending... I didn't even see it coming, which is why I really did appreciate it. And I give the producers and the director a lot of credit for sticking to their guns and having the guts to follow through the way that they
absolutely,
did.
Because
it raises a lot of questions about theology, religion, angels, where things come from. You know, even if the numerical issues with the prophecies were a little bit, okay, that was a little bit of a stretch to me.
Sure.
But it still fulfilled its purpose in telling the larger story that they ended up directing things towards by the ending.
Right. And there was, you know, and there was some really cool stuff. I'm sure most people that listen to this know at least the premise of the movie, which is that 50 years ago, a bunch of kids put stuff in a time capsule at their grade school, and now 50 years later, it was dug up, and one of the pieces of paper that a kid pulls out is covered with numbers that his father, who happens to be
Nicolas Cage
and an astrophysicist
right.
figures out
how
our
convenient.
Dates and latitudes and longitudes for every like
modern disaster.
Major disaster that's happened in the last 50 years in order.
Right.
With the number of people dead and, you know, exactly where the thing took place. And so, you know, one of the things in the movie is that his wife died. And, you know, so there's this whole issue of, you know, if he had found this, you know, a few years earlier, he could have and figured it out then.
Although I don't think he could. I think that things were set in stone.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing.
Even
that
if
this
you
said.
Knew, you couldn't change.
Right.
Yeah, you couldn't change that destiny.
But I will say one of the things that really, really bugged me about the movie was the decision to cast the same two actresses as three generations of different characters.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, the little girl at the beginning of the movie who scribbled all the numbers
right.
is the same girl who played the daughter of that little girl's grandmother who was her,
you know,
her granddaughter.
I honestly didn't catch that, Lou. I may have been just so focused on the story, I didn't
And when they showed
that.
The picture of that little girl as an old woman before she died, that was the same actress who played the mom
okay.
in the present day.
Okay.
And when they showed her in the future... like as her daughter or whatever, it was her again. So it was like they had these same two, you know, this little girl and this woman playing all these different related characters. It's like, well, couldn't you just get like six different
well,
actresses?
Well, certainly. And you know what? I did not notice it. And maybe they were, in my eye, it was a little bit more subtle to me than the glaring act in Watchmen. Remember the actress who played young Sally Jupiter?
Yeah.
They put her in the aging makeup.
Right.
That's something that just like stood out to me like a sore thumb. It's like, just get an older actress.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so obvious. It's a bad makeup job.
Yeah. And it was not a good makeup job.
No.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah, but it stood out to you as being a bad makeup job in Knowing?
It wasn't so much that it was a bad makeup job. It was just that, well, I don't understand why they use the same actresses
right,
over
right.
and over again.
They should just, they should cast other people as opposed to, aren't we clever? We put them in makeup. It's like, well, not really. I mean, it doesn't have to be the same
now
actress.
You see how the resemblance is followed through?
Right.
Well, of course it's followed through. It's the same person. You know, it's like when they made Speed Buggy and they used the same art
right.
that they used for Shaggy and Scooby-Doo as Tinker and Speed Buggy. It's like, he's not even real. Can't you just draw a new guy?
And you can find actresses that bear a slight resemblance to each other.
Yeah. I mean, they do it all the time. Well, in fact, Rose Byrne, who played the mother.
Yeah.
I guess the daughter of the little girl 50 years ago. She, to me, looks a lot like Trini Alvarado, who was big in the, like, the late 70s, early 80s. And then I think she played the grown-up little girl at the end of Pauly, that movie with the parrot.
Oh, you I didn't see it.
Oh,
no.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Oh, you've got to check that out.
Is it a kids movie?
It's a kids movie, but it's really, Tony Shalhoub is like the main
Pauly?
Guy.
Okay.
And it's just a really, really sweet film.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have kids that are like, you know, 7 to 12, you know, in your family, I think they would really dig it too.
Here's a miracle. I mean, not to go totally off the beaten path, but I've got a niece who's 6. And I had picked up a copy of that really bad remake, The Little Rascals.
Uh-huh.
I saw it in the $6 bin at Costco. I'm like, oh, and I'm a big fan of the original The Rascals.
Yeah.
So I brought it home, showed it to my niece and my nephew. They kind of liked it. They thought it was kind of funny. I'm like, well, if they did like this, and I think it was really bad, I went out and got them like the big box set of the original.
Of the originals, yeah.
They will not put it down. Even
That's
though it's
awesome.
Black and white, they are so into it. My brother tells me they're watching it all the time.
That's amazing.
They can't turn it off, and because they're the same age as the kids in the movie, and because of all the little misadventures that our game got into. And my little nephew, I've nicknamed him Spanky because he looks like Spanky, and he acts like Spanky, and that was the other reason I wanted to like get them into the original Little Rascals movies.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, I'm trying to get our son's only 16 months, but I want to try to do this thing where as we start letting him, you know, watch stuff on TV, really, I want to get him to watch like some of the old
Introduce
Disney.
Introduce the classics.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? All of the first black and white Disney things and kind of go through this progression. But unfortunately, every once in a while, you know, Sprout comes on and then it's like Thomas the Tank and, you know, all this other crap that I can't stand.
Well, I'm not, and I don't know how you feel about SpongeBob. I watch SpongeBob and I don't get it. But then again, you know, I watched Puffin stuff in the 70s and thought it was great. Maybe adults at that time didn't get it.
Yeah.
But my 7-year-old nephew, he's big into SpongeBob SquarePants. And every time I put on something that's a little bit older that I think he'll like is my niece and my other nephew like the Little Rascals. Is it black and white? I don't want to watch it.
I can't even get my wife to watch black and white
oh,
stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
There's some great black and white stuff.
I know. There is. There is a lot of stuff. But, you know, I'll say that even I have trouble sometimes, not because it's black and white, but a lot of times I have trouble watching older movies just because of the pacing. Because I do get a little bit, you know... There are some movies where I don't mind a slower pace if it suits the story. But if I'm watching an older movie and it's supposed to be more of an action thing, it's never going to live up to the kind of pace that we have today. It's just, it was different. You know, films weren't made the same way.
Although
there
are some great war movies from the 1940s and 50s that do have a good pace to them. I think of like 30 Seconds Over Tokyo or something that was in color, Guns of Navarone, which is one of my favorites with Gregory Peck and Anthony Quinn.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting, though, too, to see how historical quote-unquote action or adventure movies were treated, you know, when you compare them and contrast them now with what we have with this rapid Michael Bay, you know.
Yeah.
Can you just keep the cameras locked down once?
Have you seen well, you haven't been to the movie theater in a while, right?
Well, I think the last film I saw at the theater was Taking of Pelham 123.
Okay.
That remake.
Now, I don't know what theaters you go to, but the theater by our house, they've been showing this commercial, you know, before the movie starts. It's one of the, you know, don't let your cell phone ruin the movie kind of things.
Right, right.
But it's about it's like this whole sort of this fast-paced montage of these people who are filmmakers who are talking about how they're going to blow up Mount Rushmore. Have you seen
that one? I did see that one, yeah.
And so at the end, the park ranger's like, you can't blow up a national monument. And they're like, let me ask you a question. You ever wanted to be in a movie? He's like, what kind of movie? And the next shot is like him, you know, running past. And in the background, there's Mount Rushmore. It's like, robots! And then you see all these lasers. He's like, from space! It's such a funny commercial. It was really well done.
That is a good
really well
bumper.
Done. But... I actually kind of like Knowing. I thought it was a lot better than what I had expected going into it after having heard so many bad things about it.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised by that, which was nice. Warner Brothers has announced that it's going to make a Lego movie. It's going to be a family comedy mixing live action and animation that will be an action adventure set in a Lego world.
I'm afraid.
Yeah, my life is actually somewhat of an adventure set in a Lego world. So.
And I know you're a big Lego fan, and I just...
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to
You can't
do
make
it.
A story.
Well, you know, they're raiding board games. We're going to be seeing Candyland. We're going to be seeing Monopoly. It's like...
Well, and did you hear the Asteroids is being... The video game Asteroids?
I did remember reading about that.
Crazy.
So it's going to be interesting to see how they're able to mine something out of these.
Ooh, mine something. That was good. Asteroids tie-in. I like that.
And I wasn't even thinking of it.
Kate Beckinsale could return for Underworld 4. In fact, I think she's going to. Mm. Which
I like
really any excuse to see her on screen is a good excuse, if you ask me.
I'd like to see her then cast her as Catwoman in a Dark Knight sequel. We'll get to that later.
She would be very good in that. I wouldn't mind seeing her as Lara Croft because, you know, they're doing
she'd
a new
do
Tomb
well
Raider.
With that. Yep.
Since we know Angelina Jolie is not coming back for that. X-Men writer Christopher McQuarrie has been hired to write the Wolverine sequel, which can only be good considering I really enjoyed the first X-Men movie and pretty much hated Wolverine.
So. I didn't see Wolverine in the theater. I saw the online bootleg without all the effects, and even without the effects, I could tell it was a stinker, so I avoided it
I don't know. I just didn't like it. It didn't really do anything for me. But I think the Wolverine sequel is going to take place in Tokyo. Mm. So that could be interesting.
Which is based on one of the comic line stories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think when Marvel published one of Wolverine's origin stories, like a four, God, this is really dating me back in the 80s or 90s, late 80s or early 90s, where Marvel was doing, you know, Wolverine was a very mysterious character. You didn't know a whole lot about his origins, and they did the four-issue miniseries, and I think it was set in Japan, so that's probably the storyline they're going to be following.
Yeah. I kind of like the whole, you know, storyline of his origins, but it was just not well executed.
Yeah.
Is it John Heater or John Hader?
John Heater.
It is pronounced Heater?
Yeah.
Okay, the guy from Napoleon Dynamite, of course, will star as Oliver Vale in Buddy Holly is Alive and Well on Ganymede, which is, according to the studio, a story about an average geek whose uneventful life changes when Buddy Holly turns up on every TV channel and declares that Vale is the only one who understands why this is happening, which causes Vale to be pursued by a mob of disguised aliens. And again, pretty much anything with aliens, I'm all over that. But and I kind of like him. You know, I think he's kind
of John Heater. Yeah.
I think he's good to watch.
Yeah.
I enjoy him. There's also a new trailer up for Mila Jovovich's new movie, The Fourth Kind. We put that up on pause.com, so check that out. Or you know what? Just go to thefourthkind.net because the version that's up there, they didn't have an embed code for it, so I couldn't embed that, but it's a lot better.
Is this a prequel to The Fifth Element?
No, it's actually...
she just has this thing with numbers and the names of the titles of the movies she does.
It's more of a... Well, what's really funny is at the beginning of this trailer, she actually introduces herself, and that's where I heard her say Mila Jovovich. It's like, I always heard her referred to as Mila Jovovich.
So we finally know how to pronounce her name after
Mila
all these
Jovovich.
Years.
So, it's along the lines of Close Encounters where, you know, first kind is you see it. Second kind is there's physical evidence. Close Encounter of the Third Kind is contact. And fourth kind is abduction. So it's all based on a bunch of, you know, quote unquote true stories about all these people in Nome, Alaska who were, had repeat abductions over the course of a few years. I don't know when.
I'm intrigued.
But the trailer is pretty creepy. It's pretty creepy. So, and I love, you know, I love alien movies, so that should be pretty cool.
Hey, what did, before you go forward, did you like Day of the Earth Stood Still, the remake?
I did not really
enjoy
it.
I didn't care for it that much either, but I did like Keanu's performance. I thought he was very well cast as a dispassionate alien.
Yeah, he does that kind of thing really well. You know, and it's funny too. You know, I saw on Facebook that you did that thing, the 15 movies that, you know, stuck in my mind.
Yeah.
And then you did a follow-up to it. I will say that I remember going into The Matrix thinking, oh, this is going to stink because Keanu Reeves is in it. And then, of course...
Which is usually the assumption people
absolutely,
make.
Absolutely, you know, was totally blown away by that film. That was one of those movies that... and really, Tony is the one who said this. It's one of those movies kind of like... Because he and I have been friends since high school. And so we saw Terminator together for the first time. We saw The Matrix together for the first time. And it was really one of those movies that you walked out of realizing that that kind of movie had forever been changed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I still vividly remember seeing Terminator in the theater.
Oh, I do too.
And just...
I was a freshman at Columbia College, I think. And the reason I went out was because my motion picture distribution and production teacher was working, I think, branch manager with Orion.
Okay.
And he knew that they were sitting on gold, and he was telling us, this is your assignment this week.
Wow.
Go see the Terminator.
That's a cool assignment.
Yeah, so we watched it, and we were talking about how they were promoting it, and, you know, it wasn't a big studio release, but...
Right.
It's made history.
And you know... Even back then, it had this sort of, you know, it's funny because that was, what, 85?
Yeah.
And it still had that old film quality to
yes,
it because it seemed like it was kind of low budget.
Well, and you watch it now, and I actually caught part of it on TV at my brother's house. I was watching part of it with my my sister-in-law, and, you know, I don't think that she'd remembered seeing The Terminator or hadn't seen the original, but you're watching the stop-motion animation of The Terminator, which is far creepier than all the new CGI stuff that they're doing, because it has that very stilted or staccato motion, and it looks it's creepier than
any,
because it's man-made, because you're doing stop frame animation, or at that time it was Stan Winston's company.
Stan Winston, right.
Right, who created the design, and they were doing those effects back then.
Yeah.
What did you think of Salvation? Real quickly.
I didn't hate it, but it was just kind of a non-entity filmically.
Yeah. Why?
I loved Sam Worthington. I think he's entirely watchable, and I'm glad that he's one of the stars of Avatar, because that makes me look forward to it even more.
Mm.
Now, you know, we should talk about this. I don't have this in my notes, but, you know, they're doing this thing next week where you can go to a theater, and I don't know if it's free or if you have to buy the tickets, but you can go and watch 16 minutes from Avatar, which comes out later this year.
Hmm.
And I'm going to avoid that like the plague, because I don't like to know
why they're doing it. They're trying to build buzz.
Yeah. I mean, they've been doing a pretty good job of that already, but then it got downplayed a little bit after Comic-Con, because a lot of people that saw it there, you know, saw a chunk of it there, didn't have super things to say about it.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know how you can judge an entire film by 10, 15 minutes, especially if it's a three-hour movie. Like you're not really getting a whole bunch of story out of it.
Especially with something that is new and you don't have a lot of familiarity with it.
Yeah.
You know, what did come out of Comic-Con that's got a lot of great buzz, if you look for it on Google.
Today, you mean?
No, this was I think this leaked last week. The Iron Man 2 trailer.
Oh, really?
You haven't seen it yet?
No.
Well, I've got it on my Facebook page. I've got it linked there. Oh, great stuff, man.
Does it look cool?
Great stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. It's so great to see Robert Downey Jr. back. And Sam Jackson's going to be in it. And they've got... I'm having an Alzheimer's moment. The wrestler, Mickey Rourke, is playing Whiplash.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and Scarlett Johansson in it. Again,
the Black Widow.
Another good reason to see any
course.
Film. Yeah, and of course, I this is what I thought you meant. District 9 came out today, and I'm really looking forward. We were trying to get a babysitter for, like, tonight or tomorrow, because I really want to see this movie.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I've heard nothing but good things about it from the people who have seen it.
They got a lot of buzz from Comic-Con, too. That's how they're starting to build their publicity around it.
Yeah, and it looks cool. You know, it's like a sort of faux documentary style, and it just looks like it's going to be really neat. Edward James Olmos is going to be in the Green Hornet, which he let slip at Wizard World here, which is why I think that it already happened, because I think that's where I read about it. But he didn't say what role he's playing. If you missed Up, Pixar's latest movie in the theaters, it's going to be out on Blu-ray and DVD on November 10th. Ed Helms from The Office will star in a movie called Central Intelligence about an ordinary guy who gets mixed up in a world of international espionage. That's such a formulaic thing to do. You know, there's so many movies about that kind of thing. How come there aren't more movies about a spy who all of a sudden, like, has to live in the suburbs and do nothing for a while?
Well, we kind of saw that with True Lies, and we're still waiting on the sequel for that.
Well, you know,
which they've been talking about
on last week's show. We talked about the fact that Tom Arnold just said that the day after Arnold Schwarzenegger is out of office, they're starting shooting.
That's great.
So, but you know what?
Something to look forward to.
He didn't mention Jamie Lee Curtis, though, and you cannot do a sequel to that movie without her.
You can't. I hate it when they do sequels to movies where you've got very, very endearing characters that you remember, and for whatever reason. Well, this was the big problem when they did the sequels to Raiders of the Lost Ark originally.
Yeah.
Where was Marion? Thank God they finally brought her back, but unfortunately the movie was a stinker.
It was so terrible. It was so
terrible. Wasn't worth it.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah, they got to bring Jamie Lee back.
Yeah, if they do that, they have to bring her back.
Yeah.
Because you just, and even Eliza Dushku.
Yeah.
You know?
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Now that she's a much bigger star, you know?
Yeah.
Nimrod Antel's Predators movie starts shooting September 28th.
Heard nothing about that. It's another Predator sequel?
Yeah, and it's being produced by Robert Rodriguez, and then Nimrod, you know, and
it's a remake. Actually, I remember reading that Rodriguez was doing a remake of Predator, but there were going to be more Predators.
And it's not, it's going to be on the Predator planet. It's not going to be here.
It's not really a remake.
No, it's not. I don't think it's a remake.
Okay.
But you know, I have to say, if your name is Nimrod, you should change it. Do they not know the connotation that name has? I'm just saying. Bryan Singer will be directing Galactica for Universal. This is why I said we're going to be talking about this more.
Where did you read this? Because I didn't
wasn't
up on this news.
It was just last couple days.
So it's a continuation then.
It's not. It has nothing to do. It's a continuation. It's based on the original show.
Right.
And has nothing to do with the show that just wrapped on Sci-Fi.
No, I understand. That's what I meant. Yeah, they're going back. Because, you know, Tom DeSanto was working with Bryan Singer on the aborted effort, and then they did the reimagining. And I think that I remember, it may have been Glenn or Richard I was talking to, who said, yeah, they would need to let the new Sci-Fi show run its course, and then maybe they'll be in a position to go back and do the continuation of the original show the way that they wanted to before...
Right.
Plug got pulled on it. So, well, that's exciting to hear.
It is exciting. And, you know, Bryan Singer has done a lot of good stuff. I don't know if you like the first two X-Men movies. I really enjoy them.
I did.
They were
them.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, no, they were well
you
done.
Know, loved Usual Suspects. And, you know, he's just done a lot of cool stuff. So that'll be pretty interesting when that comes out. I still don't know why they're doing this. MGM's remake of Poltergeist is going to be out on November 24th of next year. Why would you remake that movie? That makes absolutely no sense.
Because it's a brand name that they figure that they could still try to milk some more cash out of.
You know what? That's one of those films to me that you just don't mess around with.
Well, I agree. It'll be like remaking Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Yeah. Another, and you know that's going to happen someday.
Let's not even talk about it.
That will be the day I die. When I hear the news that they're remaking Raiders of the Lost Ark, I'm just going to have a heart attack.
I will join you.
Ay, ay, ay. And then, sadly, John Hughes passed away on the 7th. He was 59. He died of a heart attack. And really, he, I think, probably more than any other filmmaker in the 80s, captured the sort of romanticized view of what the 80s were all about for a young person.
Absolutely.
I mean, I didn't live the life like of any anymore. Of those people, but that was sort of, it was something that you felt so comfortable with immediately. You know, you could identify with somebody in every
one
of his movies.
Well, that's the point. I grew up on the North Shore.
Yeah.
I went to New Trier, and a lot of those stories kind of came out of the North Shore.
Yeah.
And a lot of the clique that I hung out with in high school, we were, you know, from all sides of the tracks.
Right.
And, you know, to go to the movie theater and see John Hughes's movies wasn't a reflection so much of ourselves as much as reaffirmation of like who we were.
Exactly. And the ideas of either who we were or who we wanted to be.
Right.
And all of his movies dealt with that in some way. And you know, they weren't groundbreaking in terms of the kind of stories. I mean, a lot of them go back to Romeo and Juliet kind of things.
Sure.
You know, in many ways. But they were just so well executed, and his writing was so much fun. And he had this, you know, he had this strange ability to create these like ridiculous phrases and catchphrases and buzzwords that we didn't use before the movies came out, but did after.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That we really picked up on and you know, they got incorporated into our lexicon, if you will. But
as much as I love the teenage movies, I got to say my favorite John Hughes movie is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Really?
Yeah, that one just sticks with me the most.
Yeah.
It was just such a very sweet movie.
It was, but I think for me at the time, it was almost a little too sad, too.
Mm.
Because it was
different, though.
It was a little bit of a heavy movie in some ways.
By the time he got to the end.
Yeah,
I understood.
And I do think it was a great movie.
Yeah.
But, okay, so the big question is, Pretty in Pink or Some Kind of Wonderful? Because they were basically the same exact movie, but with the male and female roles reversed.
I didn't see Pretty in Pink. Okay. I did see Some Kind of Wonderful, though, and I liked it. So
I love
have
that
to
movie.
Say.
Yeah, some kind of
The Breakfast Club was closer to me in the fact that it really represented the type of friends that I had in high school because we were from so many different sides of the tracks, you know,
right.
and our backgrounds and how we came together and bonded with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such a great movie. And it was so much fun when they lampooned that in Not Another Teen Movie a few years ago.
Oh, that I didn't see that.
You got to see that just for that.
Okay.
It's really funny. In fact, they brought back, I'm blanking on the actor's name who played the principal. Paul Gleason.
Oh, yeah.
They brought him back to actually play that same character
in
the little spoof within the movie, which was really funny. Yeah, you should see that. Check that out. Not Another Teen Movie. It was pretty funny. It was dumb, but it was funny.
I came across a bit of John Hughes documentary news on one of the film sites a couple days ago that I just pulled up that is ironic in light of his untimely passing. If I can quote this. At first, no one cared when Matt Austin Sadowski, a former actor on Power Rangers, made a 75-minute Roger and Me-style documentary about his search for the reclusive John Hughes, entitled Don't You Forget About Me. But less than a day after John Hughes died, Austin Sadowski was fielding calls from distributors. Are you serious, he'd ask. Serious as a heart attack, they probably didn't say.
That's
but true.
Terrible.
His documentary, That's now terrible. Everybody's flocking to it and wanting to distribute and release it. And it's interesting because I don't recall Hughes being very public.
No.
He was very reclusive. So, you know, unfortunately, in light of this tragedy, it might be interesting to see this documentary. I know that he was interviewing, I said there's a trailer online, and I saw he was interviewing a lot of the principals from the John Hughes movies.
Yeah.
A lot of the actors. I remember seeing Judd Nelson in the trailer. So
cool.
This documentary really sees cool the light of day. We'll probably get to know a little bit more about the John Hughes we didn't know.
Yeah. And, of course, he wrote Vacation.
Yes.
Which was absolutely fantastic movie. Great movie. Just so funny.
Great movie.
You know, it's funny, too. I remember when, you know, in the 80s, when all these movies of his were coming out, that somebody had written about how it was funny how in every John Hughes movie, parents were always clueless except for the fathers of girls who were always the nicest, sweetest, most understanding people in the world.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was kind of funny.
Yep.
And I really liked Home Alone, too. I don't think I liked it that much when it first came out, but I always kind of want to watch it around Christmas time now.
I show it to my nephews and my niece because my nephews and my niece are very much like that kid. And you can see how the kids relate to it, which
yeah.
is when I first showed that movie to my 7-year-old, he's now 7, my nephew Luke, a couple Christmases ago, just to listen to him laugh. And Luke also kind of looks like Macaulay Culkin at that age, so
yeah.
It's just a joy to see kids of our, you know, now
right
being able to enjoy something that from a different, not a different generation, but a different time, and it's timeless.
Yeah, it is. It really is, because I think all kids go through that phase, you know, where you're like, you wish your family was gone and
right.
you're in charge of everything, and then it's like, well, be careful what you wish for. That's a cool movie. I like that movie. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about everything else. Okay, actually, before we talk about all the stuff in the old mashup section, you said you have some updates on what's happening with the next Batman film?
Well, as much as anybody who thoroughly is a bathead, you know, looks at Google all the time or any of the Batman fan film sites, we do know that Nolan has a handshake agreement with Warner Brothers to do a Dark Knight sequel.
Okay.
He's currently working on a film called Inception, which curiously involves a lot of the principals from the Batman films,
right.
as well as, what was the Prestige that he did several
okay,
years
right,
ago.
Okay, right, yeah.
I know that Michael Caine is in it. Cillian Murphy is in it.
Okay.
Now, as far as Batman 3 goes, if we're going to call it Batman 3 or Dark Knight 2, I believe that Nolan's brothers are working on a screenplay, and they had to have known when they did The Dark Knight the direction they were going to take it in.
Sure.
I would bet money that they were going to bring back the Joker, and I think that now, unfortunately, because of the Heath Ledger tragedy, they're trying to figure out, do we bring him back and recast him, or do we completely change the storyline now?
Right.
I see a lot of people talking online that they don't want to see that character recast, and I'm like, well, they can't. They recast Katie Holmes's character with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Right.
I mean, why affect the progression of the story because it's something that happens in real life? I don't
sure.
think anybody's ever going to be able to top what Heath Ledger did, but I don't think that it's going to be a straight-on impersonation of what he did, and I think that there are a lot of other qualified actors, if they really looked hard enough, that could continue the role of the Joker in whatever story that was going to continue after the events of The Dark Knight. So,
yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people are waiting to see what's going to happen with that. In the meantime, Nolan is tied up with Inception. His brothers are working on the screenplay. Although Gary Oldman said that they're going to be going into production next year at Comic-Con. He
right,
let that
yeah,
slip.
I saw
and
that
now
too.
I think he's kind of backtracking from that. Either he doesn't know for sure, or maybe he said something he wasn't supposed to
right.
say.
Got a little spanking.
Could have been. And, you know, a lot of people were also theorizing, well, wait, Michael Caine's in this, Cillian Murphy's is in this new movie. What if Inception is just a cover name for them going into production on Batman 3?
Oh, it could
3?
Be. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, we live in Chicago.
Yeah.
So I've kind of got my ear to the railroad tracks on, which I shouldn't do, given. But.
Wow.
But
that's
within
a joke that
yeah, we
I'm
won't,
the only
we won't.
One who gets that joke in this room right now. And
but,
it's actually pretty funny.
Yeah. But to the production community, I've got my ear down to the track on the production community to try to keep on top of, you know, any kind of news that's coming in.
I don't suppose you want to explain that joke.
Well, people who know me, if they want to go to too much time, too much
okay.
time. But yeah, yeah, no, it's
well,
just
okay. Now we should tell people too that you produced a Batman fan
I
film.
I did a Batman fan film last summer. It's called The Dark Knight Project. Yes, it is a play on the Blair Witch Project in that it the story covers a pair of Gotham high schoolers who want to be the first kids in Gotham City to actually get really real video of Batman in action.
Right.
And the story bridges the events of Batman Begins in the Dark Knight. This is the period where people are wondering, is this guy for real or is he just a police gimmick to scare the crooks? The Joker has kind of started to make himself known, so things are happening in Gotham City, and this short fan film in bridging the time between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, we had the opportunity, because we live in Chicago, to make this reflect the reality of Christopher Nolan's movies.
And right.
Make, you know, our Chicago is Nolan's Gotham. So we shot this film last summer downtown. It's about 15 minutes. It's online for anybody who wants to see it for free at darkknightproject.com.
And you've won some awards for it and stuff,
I too, did. Right? Actually, Film Threat, the independent film site that a lot of independent filmmakers dread because they are merciless with crushing movies.
If yeah.
They gave us 4 stars.
That's awesome.
Which, you know, my heart skipped a beat because when I first submitted it to them, I'm like, oh, I know they hate fan films. And I know that they're not that easy with independent films, so I'm really rolling the dice here. The nicest compliment that they paid us was that you could drop our short film onto the Dark Knight DVD supplements and it would fit the continuity of what Christopher
Nolan
did.
Tonally
and
all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, now, which was exactly what we were going for.
My favorite part of the movie was the voice of the newscaster.
Yes.
Who I thought was
who
just
you know very
a
well.
Brilliant performer. But my second favorite part of the movie, I thought you did an absolutely amazing job with that fight sequence.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it looked like that scene could have been taken right out of one of those two films.
Well, one of the things that really, I mean, I'm all for fan films, and I'm all for people exploring their characters in ways, our favorite characters in ways that the studio films don't. But I think one of the big pitfalls of fan films is that when people make fan films, they take a lot of time, look at our cool costumes, look at our cool props. Their pacing is all off because they're spending so much time, you know, looking at props and costumes and looking
right.
how, and when we approach this, we're like, well, no, it's going to happen and it's over with.
Right.
We know Batman. We don't have to sit here and cover the fight scene and really hold on it. He drops in, he makes quick work of the bad guys, he rescues the two kids in the alley at the end of the film, and that's it. And my cinematographer and my fight choreographer, you know, we're on the same page with, we want this to look like it was taking place in a Christopher Nolan movie. And if you notice in Batman Begins, they were very tight with their shots of the fight scenes because in the middle of a fight scene, it does happen very quick. It is very real. It's very, you know, quick and brutal. And I thank you for that compliment because we really were trying to match the tone and not have things stand out in a way that suddenly took you out of the story to show off, oh, we had a studio quality bat suit. Oh, you know, we were doing all these fancy moves. No. It happens, and that's how you've got to approach. And I think one of the reasons I'm proud to say we have been successful with this film, at least you know, in the online community, is because it's not like a lot of other fan films that do just kind of sit and look at things. It's like we paced ourselves in a way that everything happens, the story advances. We are economic in our storytelling approach, and when it's done, it's like, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
And we at the time that we made the film, I was privy to a few details of what was going to be happening in The Dark Knight.
Okay.
So we peppered The Dark Knight Project with things that happened that could conceivably dovetail into what happens in The Dark Knight. So there are no contradictions in our short film going into The Dark Knight,
which
is why
really
it works.
Cool.
And
yeah.
I was very conscious of that. My DP went out to Los Angeles before Dark Knight opened after we finished our film, and he got a chance to see an advanced screening.
Yeah.
And the first thing I asked him when he got back, I'm like, are we cool?
Yeah.
We don't contradict anything, do we? And he's like, no, we're safe.
Yeah, that was really neat. I thought that was really neat, too.
So.
And I have to say, I mean, I know you let me audition for the part of Gordon.
Yeah.
I thought you did a great job. I mean, you sounded just like him.
Did
that
I?
Was really cool.
I still don't think I did. And I think that there was something tonally in his voice that I you know, with Gary Oldman, he kind of has this kind of breathy quality to his voice. And, you know, in the 11th hour when I was editing, trying to get it online, because we had the film online a week before The Dark Knight opened.
Right.
And that was our intention because we'd built some buzz for our site through MySpace. And like, is this a Warner Brothers movie or what is this all about? But, you know, I just made the 11th hour decision. I'm not an actor. I don't like doing it. But I figured I was imagining kind of what I wanted our Gordon to sound like, because another important point, I never wanted to represent any of the characters from Nolan's movies. That's why, although we had Batman in it, we didn't see Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Because
exactly.
In this movie, Bruce Wayne, and even in my movie, Bruce Wayne is supposed to look like Christian Bale.
Right.
We didn't see Commissioner Gordon, but we heard him on the police radios.
Right.
And I wanted to make it seem like, well, Gary Oldman is off screen.
Yeah.
You know, with the other police characters.
No,
that
I thought
did
you did a great
in.
Job. So,
well,
that.
Thanks. I hope people
cool.
enjoyed it.
And it's a cool movie. Definitely, if especially if you're into the Batman movies, or if you have ever thought about making your own fan film for something that you do really care about, definitely check it out because it shows you. You know, the upper echelon of that kind of work. So
the movie is 15 minutes and the behind the scenes program is also 15 minutes where I went into great detail, you know, showing how we meticulously planned this and made sure that everything was authentic to fitting into Nolan's, honoring Nolan's universe. It's darknightproject.com.
Cool. Now, what are you working on now?
Right now, as I said at the start of the show, I am attached to direct a feature called Bluegrass Run. With a production group out of Kentucky named Trinity Angels Productions.
Okay.
It is the story of a low-level mob enforcer who has to lay low and get out of Chicago because indictments are being passed down. And he decides to lay low down in Kentucky with this woman that he's met chatting online. And it turns out she's a horse trainer, and she's got a horse running in the Kentucky Derby, and he ends up falling in love with her. And he's a character who's also kind of trying to get out of the life that he's in. So it's a story of redemption. You know, the mobsters are following him down to Kentucky. There's some business going on down in Kentucky with her and her father who's running for governor and the race that the horse is going to be running in.
Right.
So the best tone I can describe for this film, because it's not a comedy, does have some romance, but I like to point to Midnight Run.
Okay.
A favorite Robert De Niro, Charles Grodin movie that isn't really a comedy, but it's got some comic overtones, but that's the tone that we're going for with a little bit of romance in it since he ends up falling in love with this woman and they have a relationship. And the other film...
Well, if you could, I just want to say, if you could pull that tone off, that would be amazing because
that's
one of my favorite films.
One of the best Robert De Niro movies ever.
Absolutely.
And I wish I'd seen Charles Grodin more.
That movie to me is... is I think the pinnacle of what Robert De Niro can do with comedy.
Absolutely.
And it really bothers me that he went that route that he has done since then.
With Analyze This?
Yeah, with those kind of movies, which I just think fell completely flat. I mean,
well,
at least for me.
I agree with you. I think at a certain point, those other comedies become a self-deprecating comedy.
Exactly.
Against all the previous quote-unquote mobster characters he's played.
Right.
Midnight Run, he's this marvelously textured three-dimensional character.
Absolutely.
And you feel for him.
You really
and
feel
for him. And
at
the end, it's like, you know, you almost get goosebumps. He does the right thing.
When they're on the plane and he's smiling and Yaphet Kotto says, what are you smiling for? He's like, I feel like a cop again. It's like,
exactly.
You like, feel so good for him in that moment.
Because
you feel like he's already won.
It's
no
a story
matter what
of
happens.
It's a story of redemption.
And it's such a sweet film and it's smartly written and it's really, really funny in places.
Yes.
I mean, it seriously has some of the funniest moments from any movie of the 80s, I think.
Why weren't you popular with the Chicago Police Department?
Well, I don't think I want to talk to you about it. I'll tell you when I know you better. When you know me better, I'm going to know you better. And when are you going to know me better?
For anybody who has not seen that film or didn't have the opportunity to see it in theaters, own the DVD.
It is a
must-see
film.
Or
it is
if you
so
can't
good.
Own it. It's definitely
so
worth
good.
Adding to your collections.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a brilliant film. And I'm sorry, what was the other thing you were going
to say? Well, the other film I was talking about at the top of the show was Butcher's Dozen,
Okay. Which
is a crime thriller that I'm producing to direct. We're just in the beginning stages of looking for our independent investors and financiers to produce this in Chicago. We would set it all in Chicago. We might look at shooting some of it in Detroit because of the tax breaks that they're giving independent filmmakers for shooting stuff in Detroit.
Right.
So that's a project I've been developing, for about 4 years now. No, actually longer, 4 or 5 years. It was written by my writing partner and collaborator, Sarah Caldwell, who lives out in Los Angeles. She writes screenplays, and then she asks me, what do I think? And I'm like, this is great. And she asks me if I want to, you know, co-write or collaborate on tweaking things, and I end up like doing stuff that's more action in the script, a little bit of polishing and script doctoring. The stories are great to begin with, but then it's a matter of looking at it from a director's viewpoint and figuring, okay, the writing is there, the story is there, but if I want to show this to people and really give a good sense of how it would look as a film I would direct, then I kind of go in and do the rewriting in that vein, which I'm also doing with Bluegrass Run right now.
Oh, okay.
Great script, but I'm helping them with a little bit of polish and rewriting on it just to make it a little bit more what it needs to be when we go into shooting.
Right.
And actually, we're shooting a scene for Bluegrass Run the second week of September as a proof of concept piece for the investors that we're talking to, who are, you know, very, very close to committing to financing it. So
now, does the investment and, you know, fundraising for a project like this take a lot more time than the production itself, usually?
It can, but it's very, very dependent on who you know. And yeah. up till now, I really have not had my hand in this in the bucket of who I know. And thankfully, this past year in Chicago, as well as having some momentum from Dark Knight Project and some other short films that I've produced, have gotten put me back on the radar. Yeah. So as I'm meeting people in the local production community and networking, I'm starting to connect with potential financial interests that ask me, well, what are you doing?
Right.
Well, I'm doing film-related projects. And there are some financial interests and investors that are looking to put their money more into entertainment ventures as opposed to other commodities that
right.
that they're investing their money in. So I had the opportunity to meet a young man a couple weeks ago who is tied in with some financial interest. And he said, yeah, I know some people are looking to diversify their finances into entertainment. And I'm like, well, you want to be a producer on this? So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's in the beginning stages, but Butcher's Dozen, I'm telling you, it's a good script.
Yeah.
If you like crime thrillers, if you like serial killer stories, and this is a police procedural, and we've got a great lead character, our the homicide detective. Her name's Samantha Beckett. She's very much in the vein of Clarice Starling.
Okay.
Or Olivia on Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Right.
Great female protagonist who I've been telling financiers also, even if we do this film, we can spin her off into a TV series covering the years between this story, because Butcher's Dozen starts 10 years ago and then picks up in the present.
Oh, that's cool.
So there are 10 years there that, well, what was our character Samantha Beckett doing in the Chicago Police Department? So you could go back
right.
there and cover that stuff too. So it's cool. Ripe with a lot of possibilities.
Well, good luck with both of those.
Thank you.
Both sound like cool projects. So just moving on to the last bits of things here. The Zune HD is available for pre-order now. So for those of you who have not seen all the details on it, it's got an OLED touchscreen with a 272 by 480 resolution, which is 16 by 9, so that's pretty cool. Integrated Bing search. It'll be available on September 15th in either 16 or 32 gig capacities for $220 for the 16 and $290 for the 32. The pre-orders are available in either black or silver. The black is for the 16 gig and the silver is for the 32. And when it's finally released, it'll also be available in red, blue, and green. And they also have 10 different etched designs because it's done in anodized aluminum, so you can, you know, pick one of those designs if you order it online and that sort of thing. And it's got a claimed battery life of 33 hours for music and 8.5 hours for video, which will run up to 720p, which is pretty amazing.
Nice.
So yeah, so that should be pretty cool. Samsung introduced two new cameras that have not only touchscreens on the back, but they've got a second screen up front, which is really cool. So if you're taking a lot of pictures of yourself or, you know, group photos, you can actually see yourself and compose the picture while you're looking at the lens because
nice.
It's got another little screen on the front.
Easy.
I'm surprised nobody's done that before, actually. No pricing on that. Hong Kong is rolling out the world's first fleet of solar ferries using 3/4 solar energy and 1/4 fuel to achieve up to 50% reduction in carbon dioxide output, which is a good thing for Hong Kong because have you ever been there?
I've read about
the smog and pollution there is dreadful. I love that city, but there are pockets where the smog and pollution just accumulate that it's almost literally suffocating.
How often have you been there?
I've been there 3 times.
Okay.
And all within the last 5 or 6 years. And it's a great city, but they have not traditionally or historically had very good anti-pollution regulations in place. And it can get a little bit suffocating. But so that's pretty cool. LG has released a touchscreen watch phone called the GD910 for $1,270 with a 2-year contract.
Calling Dick Tracy.
Exactly. And it's only available on the Orange Network in France for now, which is fine because nobody here has $1,270.
That would be cool, though.
It would be pretty
cool.
Total
Dick Tracy technology.
Yeah. I remember when a few years back, it was a big thing for electronics companies to come out with little TV phones, like they had, or TV watches, you know, little black and white TV watches. But having a little watch phone is kind of cool. But $1,270, come on. That's ridiculous. Judge Leonard Davis of the U.S. District Court for Eastern Texas has ordered an injunction against Microsoft to stop selling Word because it allegedly infringes on patents by a Canadian developer called i4i, and he's ordered Microsoft not only to stop selling it, but to also pay them $200 million in damages.
Wow.
So I'm sure that will get overturned or something.
They'll probably appeal it.
Yeah.
That's not the first time I've heard of Microsoft stuff kind of...
No, and, you know, it's
pillaging
so
from other... platforms, or
and I think that happens a lot, and I'm sure some of it is, you know, somewhat malicious.
Yeah,
But I also, you know, so many of the patents that are granted are iffy to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's a company that supposedly recently has come out saying that they own the patent on everything having to do with streaming media online. And they're trying to decide how they're going to enforce that. Which would mean that even if they wanted to, they could come after us for podcasting.
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous. So it's, you know.
Well, I go back to the example, though, of you know, Gates starting out with Jobs and Windows kind of being an offshoot of the Mac desktop. And I'm a Mac guy.
Yeah.
I mean, just because I use so many video, graphic, and audio applications,
right,
that it's just a much more stable platform to me for that.
Yeah.
But even going so far, you know, Microsoft, and I'm not knocking them, but they are a largely better marketed company, which is why they proliferate the market. And then you've got these issues that come up, like, well, I don't think it was maybe malicious that word infringed on anything, but you've got people developing things at the same time, and there's a lot of corporate espionage.
Yeah,
there's
that's
no question
true
about that.
That's absolutely true. And a lot of corporate headhunting, which is, you know, borderline espionage if you think about it.
Yep.
But actually, with regard to Windows and the Mac, they both got their inspiration for that from same place, from Xerox PARC.
Oh, okay.
They had both seen technology demonstrations at Xerox PARC, and they had showed off the use of a GUI using a mouse.
Interesting.
And that's where they both kind of got the idea to kind of go in that direction. I mean, Apple obviously jumped on it a lot faster. And something that a lot of people don't know is that Apple actually had a better operating system at the same time as the Mac that they killed off on purpose because they wanted the Mac to do better. When they released the Apple 2GS...
Apple did or Micro... You said Apple
did. They killed- Apple had their own better GUI.
Okay.
The Apple IIgs had a really great GUI that used the mouse and everything that was almost identical to the Mac's operating system, the first Mac's, except it was color. So they had color and stereo sound with the GUI on a computer that was less money and more powerful than the Mac, but they had plans for the Mac, and so they kind of like killed off the 2GS, even though it was selling much better than the original Mac sold, which is pretty interesting.
Do you think maybe they downgraded the technology so that they could like sell something of lesser technology and then start introducing the new technology to sell the new stuff?
I'm sure that was part of it, but I think too that there were certain things that they wanted, because the technical specs of the systems were vastly different, and I think there were probably things that they had future plans for with the Mac that they couldn't do with the sort of technology, you know, with the technology that the 2GS was built on. So I think that it was probably a little bit of both. I mean, I'm sure you've heard the, you know, stories about especially like medical equipment companies that sell stuff to hospitals, and they might have a range of, you know, five different products, and the low end one and the high end one are exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's just that when you pay for the high end one, the guy goes inside the low end one and flips a switch and turns those features on.
Well, it's like with editing software.
Coming
from my, you know, you've got the dongle, or when I used to use Avid software, it's like it wasn't that the software couldn't do all the things the higher end thing did. You just had to pay more, and then suddenly you had the key or the
unlock
dongle
key,
to do the same
thing. Now, Avid just finally went away recently, didn't they? Didn't they finally make their last system or something?
If they have, I'm not aware of it. I've been working primarily on Final Cut Pro, so honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
I work on both Avid and Final Cut. I know that Avid reintroduced their software to the Mac platform, because for a while they were exclusively on, I don't know if it was it was a PC-based system. I think it was the NT system, and then whatever followed that. But I know that they've released software now that's now compatible again with Macintosh and Apple platform. Yeah.
All right, cool. The other day, Chevy announced that the Volt will get the equivalent of 230 miles per gallon, after which Nissan poked fun at them, saying the Leaf will get the equivalent of 367 miles per gallon.
Wow.
Now, how they came to these numbers has to do with a formula that the EPA came up with. You know, whether or not those numbers really mean anything will kind of be determined. But it's pretty cool that there are, you know, Chevy and Nissan are both sort of competing in this arena of trying to outdo each other with this technology, because that's only going to be good for consumers
Absolutely.
And the environment in the long run.
Yep.
Although, you know, I keep forgetting to look this up. I had read something at one point that that hybrids in particular are not necessarily as good for the environment as people think they are, because the technology used to both make and dispose of the batteries at some point is actually worse for the environment than if they just use a gasoline engine.
I need
to look that up, because that's kind of an interesting...
Well, I would advise people, too, also, if they can seek out who killed the electric car, because we've had the technology, for a while now. It's not suddenly new or it's something that we have to develop. They had the whole electric car program in California, which was a great success until GM squashed it. And it's interesting.
Yeah.
When you look at the environmental factors and the cost factors, fuel efficiency, even hybrids, it's like, you don't need a hybrid. We've got the ability to make the electric car.
But yeah.
Your point here is interesting. I'd like
to explore it.
And
that's what both the Volt and the Leaf are. They're both, they're both all electric cars.
Okay.
I think the Volt might have a gas engine that kicks in in an emergency?
I think it is a hybrid. I remember reading about the same thing in the paper just the other day. Whether it was this car or another, they were talking about the fuel efficiency with a hybrid.
Yeah. But I think the Leaf is an all-electric car.
Mm-hmm.
And, even the hybrid technology has been around forever. That's what train engines use, that same technology. Because they're basically electric, but the electricity is generated by a diesel engine. So it's, they've got that whole regenerative thing going on there, too. There's a rumor that iTunes 9 will have Blu-ray integration, which is big news for Apple fans since they have never supported Blu-ray, as well as the ability to rearrange your apps in various ways on the iPod and iPhone, social networking integration, and Cocktail, which is the new album-centric stuff that Apple's been working on, trying to revive sales of albums versus individual tracks. So if you buy an album under the Cocktail program, I don't know what they're going to call it when it's released, but you'll get things like digital downloads of, liner notes and other media that goes along with the album that you can't get if you're only buying individual tracks. So see what happens with that. It seems that Palm has been making some running changes in the hardware manufacturing process for the Pre, as it has improved a little bit the Oreo effect, which is the tendency for the Pre to kind of twist and torque itself a little bit, and the two halves of it to kind of get a little bit janky, as Tony would say. So that'll be neat to see if that actually improves it. There's also a rumor that Windows 7 pre-order deals will resurface either closer to or right after launch. So if you missed the special where you could pre-order Windows 7 for $50, chances are you'll get to do that again at some point in the not-too-distant future. VW's board has approved the merger with Porsche, so it'll be interesting to see if that actually happens. There's a website called Hello from Earth that will send your text message to Gliese 581D, which is an Earth-like planet about 20 light years away. So anyone can go on and register with the site and put in a little text message, which will get broadcast off in the direction of that planet.
That is if they understand English or whatever language.
I was going to say, what's so funny is if you go onto the website, they're like, sorry, all messages must be in English. It's like, well, why? They can't speak English over there anyway. So I actually sent a message, and I started my message off with 00011011.
Is that the coordinates from that car?
No, it's just the first four numbers in binary.
Oh, okay.
And then I followed that up with 0123.
Okay.
And then I followed that up with 0 through 9.
Okay.
So that hopefully if it gets there in 20 years and and they understand any of it, that they'll be able to at least and then I put pi after that, the number for pi, and then I put a message about please come and visit only if you're nice and bring snacks,
right? And then 20 years we'll be invaded. Thanks, Luke.
The world's gonna end in December of 2012 anyway, right?
Now, is it really gonna end, or is the life we know it gonna end and we're entering a completely new era of enlightenment? And
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if anything's gonna happen.
I don't think it's literal. I think things are already happening to change the world that we're living in.
Yeah.
Not to end in a literal way, but I think that the way our society and everything else is functioning. That's a whole other show.
You know what bugs me about the preview for 2012, though? I think it's a
pretty
cool
disaster
preview.
Movie. Yeah,
I know. It's another disaster movie from the guys who have done so many of those things. Although I didn't like The Day After Tomorrow or whatever it was.
It was The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, it was just, I don't know, it just was kind of flat for me. But
It was cool seeing downtown Los Angeles get wrecked from tornadoes.
They do like to do fun.
It was my neighborhood when I saw that movie, and I lived in Los Angeles. I'm like, oh my god,
this is
what's going right down my street.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because I like a good disaster movie.
Yeah,
if it's a good disaster movie,
disaster porn, as they call it.
Exactly.
Now.
But the one thing that bugs me is they start off the trailer by saying, mankind's oldest civilization. It's like, okay, they're not the oldest civilization, because at the very least, the Egyptians and Sumerians were around before the Mayans.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can't base a movie on a fact that's
false
wrong.
False premise.
Especially since there is a lot of truth to the Mayan prophecy about the end of the world in some capacity.
Well, because other Mayan prophecies, and I'm not that well-versed in it, but I've talked to other people
who have come to pass.
Yeah. So it's going to be curious, well, is this one also?
Yeah, and they knew a lot of stuff that they don't seem that like they should have known.
Well,
astronomically, yeah. And that sort of thing.
And what's scary too is when you read articles about NASA not having enough telescopes to watch these asteroids and meteors that are coming by the Earth.
Well, that's been in the news a lot the last few days,
hasn't it?
Yeah. Because some people are, you know, some proponents of that program are really starting to get nervous because they're like, look, we need to do this. There are a lot of these things that we have not cataloged yet. There are a lot of them that we haven't even found yet. I mean, there are millions of objects in, you know, whether it's the asteroid belt or the I forget what that other thing is called that's a little bit further out. But I love reading stuff about that. In fact, I posted a link to a video that I actually was going to mention it here. There's a video and animation online about the Hubble Ultra Deep Field. Now, I don't know if you ever saw the Hubble Deep Field picture that has been around for like 10 years or something like that, where they took the Hubble and they pointed it off into an area of space that was just completely black. It was kind of off in the direction of the Big Dipper. There was just nothing there. No stars, no nothing. So, you know, and time on the Hubble telescope is expensive and very much in demand, so a lot of people were against the idea of doing this because it was like, well, you're pointing this telescope to an area that, as far as we know, there's nothing there.
Yeah, but what if something happens that we're not watching?
Yeah, so they do it, and they left the telescope open for 10 days, and then they assembled all the data afterwards, and what they came back with was one of the most beautiful images I've ever seen in my life. Just like
I think you said that to me.
I think I may have thousands of galaxies.
Yeah,
you know, each one containing possibly trillions of stars,
which are suns, which planets can orbit around.
It's just mind-boggling to think about. So then they did it again a few years ago, and they also were recording redshift, which is a phenomenon that happens based on light traveling long distances and getting pulled by gravity and stuff like that. And so using that redshift data, they actually animated the images, so you can go and watch this animation, and the guy who does the voiceover is kind of like an everyday voice, but the way he explains it and whoever wrote this, it's so eloquent and beautiful, and you know, it really gives you the chills to think about the stuff that he's saying in this animation, in this video. And then at the end, you finally see these stars start to like come towards you, and you're kind of doing this like drive through of, you know, these thousands of galaxies, and it really is a really cool thing to watch.
I gotta recheck that link.
Yeah,
again.
Check it out. It's really neat.
Can I throw in my movie guy pick regarding the subject?
Absolutely.
Deep Impact.
Yeah.
Great movie. Forget about Armageddon. Go see Deep Impact.
Yeah, I definitely thought that was a better movie of the two.
About
now,
the
did you see the one
issue
that they did on TV like a month ago or whenever that was?
No, I missed that.
You know what I'm talking about?
I think I read about it.
Yeah, I don't even remember what it was called, but it was another, you know, asteroid hits us and we're all screwed kind of movie.
Yeah, we don't need to do it anymore after Deep Impact. It was the best of its genre.
I still think they know something already that they're not telling us about, because it's very unlike the government and NASA to do missions like the one where they what was the one that they did a few years ago where they just like exploded something on the surface of a comet and didn't take any readings and didn't try to collect anything? It's like, well, let's just see if we can hit it.
Did they? Like, I don't remember reading
like,
that
really?
Story.
You're not even going to take any readings or try to get anything?
The whole let's knock it out of the sky if we have to.
Right, yeah. Can we break it down so that if it is coming towards us, it'll just burn up when it gets
so
there?
So they did do this? Or is it
they did it a few years ago.
Okay.
And it's just like, okay, we hit it, next. It's like, really? I don't know. It just kind of gave me the creeps.
Could have been preparing, yeah. Well, you know, it's the whole thing like with UFOs. You don't want to tell the public too much when we know that there's information there.
Right.
Because you don't want to cause a panic. If they're doing this with trying to figure out how they could knock comets or asteroids out of the sky in case we were in danger,
yeah,
people are going to flip out.
Yeah. I love, though, the one thing that's cool in the 2012, the preview for the movie, you know, 2012, that I like is in that movie, you know, the government has secretly been building these giant ships that are going to let everybody, you know, survive because the, you know, Earth is taken over by tidal waves and all this bad stuff happens. But that whole idea of like all this secret building going on somewhere by the governments of the world, it's such an appealing ideal to me, even if there's something a little bit malicious and you know, not necessarily on the up and up about the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's still like there are
Well,
all
it's
these...
how they would handle it.
Yeah.
When you look at you know, the issues with the economy and all the money that's being spent, and you're like, well, where is it going? You know, who knows? Maybe some stuff is being diverted towards programs we can't know about.
Right. I mean, we already know there is a lot of that stuff that happens on the military front. I mean, black projects are, you know, billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And they happen all the time, and, you know, the government doesn't even really deny that they exist. It's just nobody talks about them.
Right.
You know, and there are all these people who in the 70s found all this information about these devices that were used to bore tunnels. But instead of, you know, like if anyone who's seen Total Recall, you know those machines that they had. That,
oh, yeah.
I mean, they really, those machines exist. Yeah. That's what they used to build tunnels for.
We've got things with construction.
Right, for subways and other things.
Right.
But Raytheon, the company Raytheon, had invented this tunnel boring machine that instead of using like big digger nose cones like that, used a small nuclear reactor in this vehicle that would superheat this element on the front of the vehicle to actually melt rock, which would then rapidly cool around it and form a perfectly structural glass, like basically enclosure around the tunnel that they were boring. And so there were all these patents filed for the thing, and then the whole thing disappeared. And nobody ever heard of what they were used for again. So there's this whole group of people that believes that, you know, our government has this like vast network of tunnels underneath the entire United States that we could all escape to in the event of, you know, some kind of, you know, planet-wide disaster.
I'd like to hope they're thinking about us instead of just the
themselves.
Congressmen, right, yeah. And everybody in the upper echelons of government.
Yeah. Well, you know that at the very least they would take, you know, scientists.
Right.
And
then they'd have a lottery.
Hotties. You know, they're always going to, okay, all the good-looking people over here.
Right,
we're going to restart. Let's,
eugenics.
You know, clean the slate. Yeah, so, you know, and then there are things like, you know, Space Command, which is actually in Cheyenne Mountain. Like, I don't know if you watched Stargate, but it takes place in Cheyenne Mountain. Like,
crazy sublevel. I haven't kept up with the series, but
that's
the original.
But that's a real thing. I mean, that really exists. It's this vast network of tunnels and buildings built inside and underground a mountain.
Yep.
And, you know, if they can do stuff like that, it you know, I don't put it past them to be able to do it with an entire city, basically, you know. So
underground cities, like that old Fritz Lang movie, Metropolis.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that they're supposedly that's a development as a remake.
That is prime pickings for a
remake. Oh, I think so. I was thinking years ago, I wish I could get the rights to like do a remake because I had some ideas on how to remake it.
Yeah.
But keep it within the same sensibility of what Fritz Lang did, but just use modern effects to represent that world and kind of.
That would be really cool.
Interesting to see how
that whole style is just so appealing to me.
Yeah, the German Expressionist period.
Yeah.
Love it.
The one movie and story that I've always wanted to see remade in some vast epic scale that's never been done that way is Journey to the Center of the Earth. I mean, it's been done like three or four times.
Yeah.
But come on, we need like the be-all, end-all Atlantis movie. You know what I mean?
So, definitely.
I don't know.
Definitely.
I don't know. I'm waiting for somebody to do that. So usually at this point in the show, Tony and I talk about our votes for the best and worst entertainment moments of the week. So I don't know if you want to give that a shot. And think about something
prepared this
week that really disappointed you entertainment-wise.
I haven't been on top of too much entertainment-wise to try to comment on.
Is there anything you watched or were involved in that you were looking forward to and then kind of didn't pan out for you?
Worst, I like to visit a site called Funny or Die.
Sure.
They've got a lot of good
exclusive
Pearl
videos.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw this short movie called The Ballad of G.I. Joe.
Okay.
Which was bizarre in that I understand that with G.I. Joe in theaters, you want to put a good spoof together about it. I was astonished at the talent that was in this little video that just was not funny.
They had
Juliana Moore in it.
Okay.
They had Olivia Wilde in it.
She's in everything now. I think
when you see these exclusives on Funny or Die, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of them have some big name talent in them.
Right.
And they're actually very funny. It's like, how did they get these actors in to do something that, in my mind, was really, really unfunny?
Yeah,
it was the G.I. Joe character singing the Ballad of G.I. Joe, and I didn't get it. I mean, I'm not a big G.I. Joe fan to begin with, so maybe I was the wrong audience for it. But even if you're not, I saw a really funny clip when Watchmen came out that was Saturday morning Watchmen, and it was hysterical. It was an animation of like if Watchmen were a Saturday morning show. How would it be distilled for kids? And it was really funny. You can find it on Google. And I think there may have been a similar intention with the Ballad of G.I. Joe on Funny or Die, but
right.
It just was not funny.
Yeah.
It should die.
Speaking of those kind of things, did you see around the time of, I think it was right around when the Oscars happened, did you see the thing that Jimmy Kimmel did, which was The Curious Case of Benjamin Batman?
No, I missed
that. Oh my
gosh. Is it on YouTube?
You have to see it.
I'll check for it.
It's hilarious.
I'll check for it.
Did you see Benjamin Button?
No, I didn't.
It's I get the humor, it's about though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. No,
yeah,
I get
it's more funny from the standpoint of Batman than the Benjamin Button part.
Okay.
But it's like basically putting Batman into the Benjamin Button story.
Oh, I gotta
and
see this
it's,
then.
It's you in particular would really like it.
Okay.
It was very funny too.
Okay.
It was very and it was really well done. You know, it was one of those things where they put the people into the scenes.
Right.
And it was I thought it was very well done.
Cool.
But yeah, definitely check that out. For my worst entertainment moment of the week, I don't have anything too specific, but just, again, our stupid DVR keeps not recording stuff. So we missed, I think we got True Blood, but we missed Warehouse 13, which we've actually been enjoying. So
that looks good. I got to start watching.
You know, it's a cool show. I really like the dynamic between the main characters of the cast. And it's, you know, that type of show is always a lot of fun. Do you watch Fringe?
No.
Did you watch it? It was pretty good. And, you know, it's coming back for another season. So, you know, it's kind of like a lighter version. You know, a lot of what sci-fi does is sort of lighter versions of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's sort of a lighter version of that kind of thing. But it's got its own unique style and flavor, and it's a lot of fun. I really like that show. But, you know, we didn't get to see it this week. And so then we got to sit in front of the computer and watch it online, which is, it's not comfortable. That's why I'm not a big fan of the whole convergence theory about, you know, TV and computer all merging.
No,
it's like,
you've got to have a big
when
screen
I watch TV,
with a couch.
I want to see it on a big screen on a couch.
That's right.
And when I'm typing, I want to be close to the screen,
right,
and not sitting on a couch.
And
so,
really, the computer, when you're talking about video applications, is more just for ease of access really
right.
quickly. I
right.
mean, I've caught a couple of episodes of TV shows online when I didn't have a TiVo or didn't have the on-demand to let
right.
me watch them, but it's definitely not the optimal way to do it.
No.
And I don't see how they're going to completely bridge that.
Well, I tell you, though, gap. I think one of the reasons it's not going to go anywhere is because advertisers love it because you can't record it.
Right.
And you can't skip the commercials.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
so you're
true.
Totally at their whim.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think they do this on purpose. The pause mechanism always seems a little flaky.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So, like, if you pause it to then go to the bathroom and then come back and try to start it up again, like, a lot of times it takes you back to the beginning and then you got to, like, rewatch it. And
or the last
so.
Commercial break.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, for advertisers, it's a good thing. But, all right. So, what about your best entertainment moment of the week?
I actually have two.
Okay.
Since I don't know when I'm going to be back, I want to promote them both. I've really been digging all the Red Band clips that are being released for the new Jeremy Piven movie, The Goods.
Okay.
About the car salesman. I think that it had to be inspired by that old Kurt Russell movie, Used Cars, which
yeah.
was a big hit
yeah.
back in the 1980s. But The Goods looks like it's going to be really, really funny.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know when it opens in theaters. I think it's this month.
Okay.
But in the meantime, if you really want to entertain yourself with some really politically incorrect humor, YouTube Hitler mashups.
Oh, dear.
Somebody, well, it's funny, actually. It's not that offensive. But somebody had the bright idea to take there was a great movie years back called Downfall, which is about the last days of Adolf Hitler in his
okay.
bunker. Somebody took a rant from the movie where he's screaming at his generals and resubtitled it with, you know, Hitler finds out he's been banned from World of Warcraft.
That's awesome.
Or Hitler finds out that his Wikipedia editing privileges have been revoked. So everybody's got their hands on this clip and
right.
they will resubtitle it. There was one that, you know, Hitler finds out Sarah Palin lost the election, or Hitler found out that Obama won the election. And people are subtitling this clip, and I've busted my gut. Just there's so many of them
really
on YouTube.
Funny.
Check them out. Yeah, no, Hitler's not funny, but
right,
when
right.
you use him to, like, completely, you know, make fun of him and
right, right.
and it was a great movie too, Downfall, but it's just been very fun to see how creative people have been
yeah.
with these little viral YouTube videos of the Hitler mashups. I would recommend, if you need a quick 3 minutes of laughter in the afternoon, go to YouTube and look them up, because
yeah,
they're
those things can be really good. It's always amazing. Isn't it always amazing when you see stuff that's crowdsourced, like how good it can
oh,
be?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's really cool. Now, did you see Valkyrie?
No,
I
have kind of a problem with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just going to say, when you were talking about The Goods, I have a problem with Jeremy Piven.
Oh,
so
and
it's
I'm
like,
not
I really have
I'm not
a hard
a big
time
Jeremy,
watching him.
I'm not a big Jeremy Piven fan.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking forward to this because of him.
Right.
It but
just
it looks
like
it's a funny movie. And
yeah.
on the Tom Cruise note, when I saw the pictures of him originally released for Valkyrie where he was wearing the eye patch, all I could think of was Fearless Leader from Bullwinkle and Rocky. And I'm like, I can't take him seriously.
That's awesome.
I'm thinking he looks like a caricature. And people said it was a good movie. So maybe I should give it a chance.
Yeah, it was actually a good movie because, again, from the whole, you know, this really happened kind of standpoint, I mean, especially with something as weighty as you know, Hitler's regime
mm-hmm.
and all that kind of stuff, it's really fascinating to see how different things could have been
oh, sure.
if that had gone to plan.
Right.
So from that standpoint, it's really interesting. But one of the things that I found very curious about that movie was that I had read, because I think it was supposed to originally come out a long time before it actually did.
They may have been developing it for a while.
And I thought that I had read that one of the problems they were having with it was that his accent was really bad. Well, when you watch the movie, he's not using an accent. So I'm wondering if they ADR'd the whole thing over again and had him like ditch the accent.
Do it normally, or else, yeah, that's very possible.
So I don't know, but yeah, I actually kind of enjoy that movie. And I'm not a big, you know, Tom Cruise. I mean, I think he's a crazy person, but yep, you know, I don't have any dislike for him.
I don't either. It's been hard for me to separate the craziness he's exhibited in public from being able to sit down and enjoy his movies.
Sure,
I feel the same way about Woody Allen.
Yeah,
I mean, Woody Allen's personal life really turns me off from wanting to see his work, despite the fact he's a great artist.
Yeah.
I used to feel the same way about Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And the allegations, yeah, he's a great musician, but all this weird stuff that's happening in his life.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Right.
You know, but they say artists are sometimes mad, so I guess we just have to kind of give them a little bit of leeway.
Well, you're going to have to lump yourself into that group.
Well,
as a filmmaker, don't you think?
In some ways, yes. I am mad. A guy who's got...
I won't make any fun of the costumes again.
A studio-scale Millennium Falcon in his dining room.
Now, how big is that? Is it like the one that was at the Museum of Science and Industry? Like 3 feet across kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't have. There were two models. There was the Millennium Falcon from A New Hope, which was 7 feet. But Master Replicas put out the studio scale with Harrison Ford's signature, and that's like, I don't know, 32 inches.
And that's the one you have?
Yeah, it's.
Do we want to ask how much that cost?
You can research it online. I don't want to say it in case my family listens to this and wonders, Jerry, how could you do that? But it's a collector's item.
Well,
now,
you didn't pay full price for that, right?
No.
Didn't you get that with a gift certificate?
I had a coupon and
box
and favors
of tricks.
And yeah. But it looks cool. I've got it in my living room, and I've got a studio scale TIE fighter and an X-wing that were actually custom commissions that I had some model builders build up for me. You got to come over, Lou.
Cool.
I got to bring you over to look at my collection.
Yeah, I would love to see all that stuff.
Absolutely.
I've talked about this before on the show with Tony, so I apologize to people who have heard me rant about this before, but if you're going to make a science fiction movie that takes place in outer space or another planet, at some point in the movie, have a space battle. Okay, we had 3 Star Wars films with no Star Wars in them.
Well, they'd say the beginning of Revenge of the Sith had some space battle in it, but it's it was like a little taste.
Yeah, that was nothing. Yeah. That was nothing. And if you're going to do it, come on, use models.
Oh,
CGI looks great, but there's a weight. And the way that light plays off a real model, I'm sorry, nobody has figured out how to reproduce
well
enough yet.
I've come across a couple of other YouTube videos that somebody took home movies at ILM during the production of the original Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica. And to see these artists, you know, in the warehouse back, I mean, this was like, to look at these little home movies, it's like you guys didn't even, maybe they did know what they were creating.
Yeah.
But it's catching that moment in time where they were revolutionizing.
Right.
Motion pictures,
everything that was going to happen,
and the special effects
yeah.
industry, and the summer blockbuster, and people should look for those too if they want to. And more innocent time,
exactly.
That where all that stuff really was about building things by hand and
figuring out the best way to tell your story, and not figuring out what to do with your toys.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because Lucas used to talk about how special effects were supposed to serve the story back when he did the original Star Wars trilogy, and I think that Lucas has kind of mutated into the Emperor. He is everything that he used to rail against.
Exactly.
Because now, any of his Star Wars films, it's just like, okay, let's build a story around how many special effects we have and how this canvas that we have to paint on. The canvas you have to paint on is supposed to serve the story, not build a story around it. And I think that he's just lost touch with that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He's a great producer, and his stuff looks great, but he's surrounded by a lot of yes-men now, which I think is why our prequels were
bad.
Yeah.
And I mean, and even Spielberg, it's like, you know, War of the Worlds could have been.
I liked War of the Worlds. I didn't think it was great, but I enjoyed it. But I don't know what the heck he was doing listening to Lucas with his story directive for
Indiana Jones 4.
Or as I call it, Kingdom of the Crystal Meth.
That's a great name.
Because he had to be on meth to watch it and enjoy it. Or Kingdom of the Crystal Crap. Excuse my language.
Oh my, no, that's fine. I mean, it was such a bad movie.
Oh, my God. How can you make Harrison Ford look... I mean, he did his best effort with it, but Indy.
I know.
You know, the problem was, the fourth Indiana Jones came just 15 years too late.
Not only that, but it was just a bad story. It was not a good script.
No.
And with War of the Worlds... There were moments in that movie that I thought leaned towards greatness, but the biggest problem with that film is I just didn't care about anybody.
And it just ended.
Yeah.
The other thing was it just ended. As the original book did, with the fact that the virus wiped out, you know, the... But the thing about I had a problem with War of the Worlds also was this idea that they had been here and they were underground and they were burrowed here and suddenly they were, like, activated. I'm like, no. You know, in the history of the Earth, we would have known if these things were buried and they suddenly came out of the ground.
Did they say that? Well, I don't think they said that. I think because remember they didn't know why the lightning was striking.
And well, the lightning showed down. No, but the lightning was activating things that were already buried underground, if I remember correctly.
I don't think so. I think the lightning hid.
Oh, okay.
I think they were coming down, and as they came down, the lightning struck. And so you didn't see the things coming down and going underground because of the lightning.
I'm going to have to go rewatch that because I misunderstood it.
But my problem, other than that I didn't care about anybody, was I don't think Tom Cruise should ever be cast as, like, the guy next door who's saving his family. He's just not that guy now. I can't buy him as that.
Yeah.
I mean, for me personally. But whatever.
I have to say, I did like Tom Cruise's performance in Tropic Thunder.
I still haven't seen that.
Oh, my God. Well, he's playing a completely comic character. They've got him looking like a Hollywood agent. He's under a lot of makeup. He's bald. He's got... I mean, it's funny, I have to say. And I think that a lot of the credit for that goes to Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
As the... He directed that, yeah.
Oh, okay.
As the director of that film. Yeah, you gotta check that one
out. We still need to watch that. Because I've heard
Downey
a lot of good
Jr.
things about parts
of
that
hysterical.
Movie.
Oh, it's hysterical. Very well done.
Yeah. Well, my best entertainment moment of the week is... And I know I didn't talk about it, and we'll talk about it next week when Tony's back. But I was really pleasantly surprised with G.I. Joe. I mean, we saw that movie the other night, and we really had a lot of fun with it. I mean, yeah, it was cheesy. And, you know, there's some other issues that I won't go into right now. But it was a lot of fun, and there was some really cool stuff in that movie. I mean, it made you, like, want to go out and get all the toys that would have been based on the film. You know what I mean?
Which I think was the producer's intention.
Yeah, which from that standpoint was great. But there was some really cool stuff in there. So, you know, I was pleasantly surprised.
I'll take your word for it.
But you're not going to see that, I take it. And I don't, you know, I was not, you know, the funny thing is I enjoy a lot of comic book-based movies. But I've never read a single comic book in my life.
I enjoy comic book-based movies. I don't enjoy toy-based movies. Okay. And really, people would say, well, you know, you're a geek either way, but... Maybe because there was a little bit more literary underpinnings with a comic book story or a graphic novel that, you could translate and adapt that as you would a novel as opposed to just a toy that, they end up making the cartoons and stuff for it, but really it was a toy first that they're merchandising into or marketing into something else.
Yeah.
But
So, did you see the Transformers movies or no?
I didn't see them either. No. Okay. And people would say, you didn't see Transformers? It's like, I was more into the comic book stuff than the toy stuff.
Yeah,
but that's just me.
Yeah. I go see them all because I like popcorn movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm always hoping that there's something good in there that I've never seen before that's fun. And usually there's at least a little bit of payoff.
And I'll have to say, I might end up eating my words someday because there was a great comic book series in the 1980s based on a toy line called Micronauts.
Oh, yeah, Micronauts were fantastic.
That was one of the best written Marvel spin-off comics that I've ever read. I didn't think about the toys. I just thought, wow, they created some interesting characters from these things that started as toys. And the stories, it was like Star Wars, but in a microverse as opposed to like a universe. Because these were miniaturized people who came from another dimension.
Right.
And I thought, man, I'm looking forward to whoever ends up adapting Micronauts and hoping that it sticks to the Marvel adaptation that I remember reading in comic books along with my Star Wars comics in the 1980s.
What's funny is I have another friend named Jerry who's also a filmmaker, mm-hmm. and he's huge into Micronauts.
Okay.
I think he has all of them.
Cool.
But all of the old original toys.
They were cool toys. I remember those when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, they were very cool. Well, thank you so much for sitting in. I really appreciate you coming out.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It was great to, to go through all this stuff with you and, you know, to hear what you're working on and that sort of thing. And definitely people, like we talked about before, go check out Jerry's Dark Knight Project film. It's really cool.
You can see the Dark Knight Project at darkknightproject.com. And my regular website is nightstar.com. And that's spelled NITESTAR, nightstar.com, and you can take a look at stuff that I'm working on and drop me an email if you'd like to and want to talk movies or anything else.
Cool. Well, thanks again for coming out, and thanks again for listening, everybody. As always, you can write to us at podcast@pause.com, and we will see you next week. Take care.
So long.